Blog Talk Radio.
Great if we had the microphone on. Well, the theme from The Godfather is always fabulous. And
seems even more appropriate this week.
Since we're in Rome this week, do you remember Godfather 2?
You know, you've always got to love The Godfather.
I mean, what were they doing? The head of the bank was doing a little bit of shenanigans with the money? I mean,
it was kind of scary, that real life parallel.
But does life imitate fiction, or does fiction imitate life here? What's going on?
You know, all great fiction, Mike, is based on reality.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's what makes it good.
Well, Elmo Leonard. Hey, we have Justified.
Yes.
But we have also, what's the name? Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, yeah.
And Zane Grey.
Yeah.
They're all Zangro Westerns in outer space.
Yeah. Well, you know, that one of the smartest things he ever said, you know, which is a rarity. That's funny.
Is it?
You know. The analysis one time, we were talking about Star Trek.
Yeah.
As opposed to a lot of these other B-grade sci-fi stuff. Because, you know, when it came out, it was kind of B-grade. It didn't have a budget, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason it resonated and lasted for the last, you know, 40, 50 years now, is the fact that it was truly human and had real characters, you know, an actual plot. But you made that point. If you don't have the human in the story, it don't matter what you're saying. It ain't going to resonate with anybody.
And speaking about human, that's exactly what Captain Kirk said in Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, when he was putting Spock's body into the capsule and shipping him off to the new formed planet. He says, he's the most human person I've ever known.
Yeah.
Little play of words there, Captain. Yeah. Yeah. But that was right out of Gene Roddenberry's mouth, where he said that you have to love or hate the characters.
Yeah.
The story does not change.
You know, it didn't matter what, you know, cheesy magic he had.
Right.
Or the, you know, the energizing transporter or the, you know, beam of a ray gun or,
that's right,
or whatever. None of that. It's just props. It doesn't matter. And if you're rolling around in the dirt with a Indian, or if you're rolling around in the dirt with a lizard man, you know, if there's not a human conflict behind it, it doesn't matter. It's not the dirt or the little plastic device that's going to make the movie, you know?
Well, it's absolutely...
I think, actually, you were totally wrong. The actual quote from that movie was, Khan!
Yeah, well, that was before that. this week's show, we're going to have a really, really, really big show. We're going to have the state representative, Joel Ford, coming on about 4:30 or so.
Ooh.
Talk to us about,
I remember Mr. Ford,
the municipal problems that the so-called mayor that we had here for years went to, became governor.
Oh, Governor McCracken.
And yes, and he doesn't remember. He doesn't remember that the city had an $850 million debt with the airport. And they were rushing to take the airport away from Charlotte. And they said, well, wait a minute. Who's going to pay the debt?
Yeah.
Duh.
Well, you know.
Because he doesn't want to raise taxes.
Now it's like, slow down.
Hold up, Silva.
Well, as with all crooks, if there's something profitable, they're your best friend.
Well, and then we're going to talk about... I have an interview, which is a great interview. It's one of a series of interviews that we're going to be doing with my pastor, Father Carl, from the Lady Consolation Church. We're going to talk about how he got to become the
Father
Peter
Sarvici?
No.
Oh, different.
Father Carl. He is going to tell us about how he, this is second tour here, but not as the pastor. He used to be a deacon here. And he's going to tell us something about himself, background and whatnot, about his grandmother, which is a great story.
Wow.
But we're also going to be talking about the conclave.
Right. Yeah, this is our...
what's going on here in Vatican City? I mean, who's on first?
Hey. Stole first.
Yeah, well, the thing is that they don't particularly like the Americans over there. They don't. I said, well, you know what? They don't particularly like the Italian Cardinals either, because they ain't been one of them in a long time either.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, I am not in the Vatican. I'm not sitting in that closed room hanging out with the Cardinals, so I can't.
That is the Sistine Chapel.
However, boy, you don't need a scandalous talk show in the afternoons to find some
some juicy tidbits in this story because every day the Italian press and everything.
Oh, man, the Liga.
What's really behind this? And
La Stampa, I think, is the name of the newspaper.
It's been
They said the Americans are leaking. The Americans are leaking. Yeah, blame us. Yeah, because we're the new kids on the block. The Italians and the French and the Germans have been running that show over there for up 10 years.
Yeah, I don't know if he was, they say the Pope may have left to dodge the bullet, to get out of town before the scandal hit, or whatever. Or he may just literally be exhausted from having to deal with all these people.
I think he wants to blow the thing up. I think he put, because he elected 67 cardinals, I think he's got his people in place who are coming in and blow the whole thing wide open.
Really?
Right, because you need 67 plus one, or you need two-thirds plus one.
So, like, his
appointees.
Is just kind of like throwing up in the door.
Yeah, because, you see, if he was there, they said, how can you clean up your own mess that you're sitting in?
Right.
So, now, he don't have to.
Now it can just be reform in between.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
And as a matter of fact, why don't we go to the interview with Father Carl and I had day or so ago, and I think everybody will enjoy it.
Well, this will take us a moment, so sit back and listen. There's a lot of really interesting insights into Catholic life and everything
right.
That's going on in the news.
Here it is.
This is The Last Word. And this is Friday, March the 8th, 2013. And I am here with my pastor, Father Carl from Charlotte, who is the pastor of Lady Consolation Catholic Church here in Charlotte and is on, I guess we could consider the second tour.
Second tour sounds good.
Second tour. But first tour as the pastor.
Yes.
And how did this occur?
Well, Michael, to make a long story fairly short for your program, I was a seminarian, ordained a deacon, and had served my required internship in the seminary, and I was assigned to Our Lady Consolation Church in the summer of 1980. I served as a seminarian as well as a transitional deacon, and got to know the number of people in the parish here. And in the fall, I returned to the seminary to finish my formal studies, classroom studies. And then in December of 1980, I returned to the parish in Charlotte and stayed on through May of 1981. Then I was ordained a priest at the end of May. So I was here, 33 years ago, I can say. I got to know a great number of people. And now you know
the grandkids.
Now, the thing is, I know the grandchildren of the people that I knew years ago. And it is really tremendous to see. I didn't know grandkids back then, but now they've grown, so many of them. And it's great. A number of them is meeting them at the door of the church. If they're going to Wake Forest, Johnson C. Smith, the Queen's College, Queen's University, I should say now. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
They have really risen. These young people going off to professional training is fantastic.
And how has the whole? I know right now you could not have imagined how the community has changed. But how has it changed? The community has changed since you were last here.
When I drove up on Stateville Avenue, I came down to visit the parish after being gone for say what 32 years at the
mm-hmm.
time. I drove down Statesville from Interstate 85 and wonder what happened. When I was here, there was a lot of housing in the area, and there was all this new housing developing. The road was straightened up and cleaned up, and found out that the city is doing what I would have called urban renewal
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
changing the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it always was a neighborhood before, but now it is so spruced up. And I'm looking at the housing, especially behind the church in the old Double Oaks area,
mm-hmm.
and realizing, it's nice new housing. The city is growing up into the neighborhood. And realizing, as nice as that is, and I thought this as soon as I saw the housing, where are the people who lived here when I was here?
Yeah, I was just about to answer that because the people who used to be here when you lived here could not afford to live in these houses.
No, they can't right now, exactly. So one of the double-edged sword of, we'll say, growth and improvement, using those words loosely, shall we say, is there's an improvement, but some people get hurt in the process.
Oh.
And all the people who lived here in the housing that are surrounding us on Double Oaks, I don't know where they're at right now, but they've been dispersed.
And you know, the thing about this is you're not quite downtown, but you're sitting between downtown and the university area, so this is prima facie property. I mean, this is going to be expensive property to live in down here.
Oh, it is. When I was a seminarian, I came from Appalachian State. I did my training in Appalachian for undergraduate and graduate work. And my major's geography, but I did my master's degree, urban and regional planning, transportation planning.
Right.
And one day I said to the pastor, at that time, over 30 years ago, I said, look around you. I said to the pastor, within 30 years, if not sooner, all this is going to disappear. The city is going to inevitably grow from the core of uptown through this neighborhood up to the interstate. The city has to grow, and they're going to move in this direction. And he said, are you sure? I said, it'll happen. Trust me, it will. It may take a while. And it did happen.
Well, I know when I had my house built in 86, and my house was the third house on a block, Charette Court. There was nothing but behind me, nothing but woods. The Hickory Grove Baptist Church had just broke ground, and I said, well, you know, this is my cousin said, you know, this is going to be a good place because it's all going to be built up from here. When I finally came down in 93, I did not recognize anything. The bank that used to be there was no longer there. It had moved two blocks away. And they had a shopping mall. The Hickory Grove Baptist Church, which was huge, was built up. I mean, everything seems to be moving out towards university. That's where it was moving out towards. So it really has changed. But getting back to the people who lived here before, they can't afford to live here. So, not talking out of school, but I'm on the parish council, and we talked about, can the people who lived here before, what are they going to do? Are they going to come back to go to church here? The new people who live here now, we're going to have a lot of influx of new people here in church. When this all gets finished, because it's not finished yet.
Right.
So the thing is, how do you, what do you say to the people who used to live here and say, well, I can't take that distance anymore. I can't drive there. I don't live around anymore. You know, and because those were the people that kept this church going.
That's right.
So what do we do now? Do we have to start a whole new way of thinking with the new people, because new people coming in are not from Charlotte. They're from around the country now. They're from around the country. So there's a major difference in how we perceive the people who are still here perceive the church being, and how the new people come in are going to perceive the church.
Right.
So it's just like, well, you know, are the new people now going to dictate to the church the way they want it, or are the older people here still going to be in control of it? I mean, there's a tug of war that's going to happen, if not happening already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're a small church. We're not a large church. How do you perceive to take and parse this to make it work?
I'm hoping with the love of the community that we continue and continue to grow, not just physically grow, of course, there's great people coming in and members of the church, but certainly growing in our sense of identity as a Catholic church, that's a Black African American church. And that we become the premier African American Catholic church in Charlotte. And I'd like to see where we're going with that.
Well, we need to have more of the people who are coming to church give money.
yes,
more
I,
money.
I won't disagree, Michael, at all. I mean, absolutely. It costs money to operate a church.
Absolutely. We just can't have the same group of people contributing once a week. We need to have everybody that comes contribute.
That's right.
And so, but, and that's what we need to get across when you have a new influx of people coming in who have come from churches across the country, that they realize that you can make your church better by contributing. They might have come from large churches. I mean, I came from a very large church in Queens. And you know, I think it had maybe about 700 families, no, 800 families, huge. And so you figure that you, but you always seem to have that same thing. It's not like I tell the story about I was at the, I can't remember what church it is here. I was there with a representative who was running for office, and they got to the point where they were collecting the money from everybody. So one section would collect the money, come up, and the minister would look at it, and you put it down, and next section would come up, put it down, and next, and then he look at it, and he says, wait a minute. He said, you guys over here didn't contribute enough. Send this back. He said, send the thing back. He sent the whole basket back. Come on, cough it up on the side. I mean, he can look at it and could say, and he stopped the service until they brought it back.
I think it's marvelous.
It's unbelievable.
I think it's fantastic.
No, the thing is, this is about this church. I don't know if you could wave it at the Catholic Church, but hey, you know, I'm thinking about what happens if you had four different collectors bring it up the basket and looked at each basket and said, well, this one don't look that, no, this one's not full. Go back down here again. What do you think would happen?
I don't know what's going to happen. I'll bring that idea to finance council next month.
We would talk about that to finance council. See what they say.
Sure.
Absolutely. Now, where are you from originally?
Originally, I was born and raised in New Jersey.
New Jersey, okay.
And spent a good portion of my life there. We did some growing up years in the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
My family moved out right in the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And we returned in the mid-50s to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there until I moved to North Carolina and go to Appalachian. And the year was 1968.
But you told a story,
yes,
at church during your homily one time about your grandmother and about the Japanese dentist, I believe it was a dentist.
Yes.
That lived next door to your family, lived next
door.
Right. Yeah. Can you please tell us, sir, because it is a fabulous, wonderful story.
Yes, right after the declaration of war between the United States and Japan, the war was declared. There was, I remember the names called Zone of Exclusion, I think, and I think it was an executive order. I stand corrected on that.
Mm-hmm.
Some historian can dig it up.
I think it was an executive order.
Zone of executive order. That 100 miles from the coast, of all the coastline in the United States, which meant Pacific Atlantic as well as Gulf, 100 miles inland, it's possible to be able to exclude peoples.
Mm. Mm.
And on the West Coast, that meant those who were of Japanese ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And as it happened, that number of some months after the start of the war,
mm-hmm,
the exercise application of zone of exclusion was started. And my grandmother's neighbors, it was family next door, really two families side by side, Japanese American families. Their grandparents, I believe, came here, but the adult children, of course, grew up here, and they were practicing dentists.
They were born here then?
They were born here.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother, my aunts, and my mother and uncle got to know the family. They went to school with the children. They were growing up, this is 1930s, early mm-hmm 40s L.A. They got to know each other. And after the after a while, after the start of the war, the Zimbabwe solution was exercised, my grandmother and the older high school children, they went into the homes of these people, these people who were carted off to the concentration camps in the desert. If they were in Germany, we'd say concentration camps.
You're right.
In our country, they're called detention centers.
Detention.
The difference is only in the name.
Right.
Anyway, so my aunts and my mother and my uncle, they went through the house and they gathered up what they knew were family mementos, antiques and family mementos that were important to the family. And they took them to their mother's house, and Grandma buried them under her house.
Mm.
And some of the items that they removed from the house were more than collector's items.
Mm.
They went back deep in their family histories when they came over to the United States. And after the end of the war, when the families returned to their houses, which were devastated, because during the war, even the doors were locked and they were boarded up, shall we say, do not cross government orders, people came in, and the tiles were picked clean. Even the fixtures in the bathrooms were gone, doors were gone, anything metal glass was taken out of the house. When the families came back to rebuild their homes and begin their dental practice.
Right.
Well, after getting started and rebuilding their homes, my grandmother and her family went under the house and dug up all the items they buried and brought them to the families to show, you know, that we wanted to protect these items. We know these are important to you. And so these items were then graciously accepted back by the families.
They must have been very, beside themselves with the...
According to my aunt, my mother's younger sister, they were very touched by that because they had no idea. They were concerned with themselves getting on the buses to go out of town.
Right.
They couldn't go back and take care of their belongings.
Mm.
But the items my family saved were told that they were loved, very much loved in that community by a number of people.
Right. See, and so therefore, what we understand from that time, that it wasn't a universal thought that every Japanese was a spy getting ready to blow up your house or invade the country. Because these people were part of the whole community.
They were members, part of the fiber of the community, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Pillars of the community.
And they were talking today, well, it was yesterday, a couple of the Republicans, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, were having a filibuster saying that the president said he was going to use drones to blow up people in cafes if they were citizens. Well, today, Graham and McCain came out and said this is the most ridiculous, this filibuster was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. I said the president never said this. They agreed with the President Obama, which is real first, but I mean, so they ripped them apart because Cruz and Graham and about three other people had this filibuster on for 13 hours up until 1 o'clock this morning, I believe it is, 2 o'clock. So, trying to say that the president could kill you if you were sitting in a cafe, if you were deemed the enemy combatant. And then Graham said today, well, you know, the only reason why we use drones over in Yemen and in Pakistan is because we can't send troops in to get you. He said, that's why we use a drone. He said, here, why would we use a drone where we can send in troops to pull you out of a cafe? So it's ludicrous. So all they did was just stir up hatred with people in their minds. And what you were saying, even though Japanese Navy bombed Pearl Harbor, that wasn't the wasn't in the head of people in America that every Japanese person was an enemy of the United States. So it shows you how people now can be led down a road.
Yes.
By one or two people, by just inciting, you know, and it's really a shame. But this is, you know, we're saying this is progress, when you now can get information at the drop of a hat. You don't even have to watch TV. You just go to your cell phone and get the information, you know. But we need to understand how information is generated and what type of information is generated. And I always say the who, what, and why.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
there has to be a reason, and then you got to look at, you know, who's the person that's given the reason and why they're given the reason. Yeah. So, anyway, but I think we have come to our main focus, which is what is going on in the Vatican? What is going on in the Vatican? This is the first time, I think, in 13th century?
Could be, sounds about right, 13th, maybe 14th century, around that time, yeah.
That a pope has resigned.
That's correct.
And they have, it's I believe it's 115 cardinals will choose the next pope.
It should be 115, I believe.
115. And now, they meet as something called, they call it the Congregation...
Conclave,
right?
Conclave.
What does that mean?
The word conclave translates into modern English as they come together with a key. That is, they are sequestered.
Mm-hmm.
Another
nice
use
word.
Of the word sequestered. Perhaps a healthier use of the term, I don't know.
Yes.
They're sequestered behind locked doors until they have chosen a new pope.
In the Sistine Chapel.
They will meet in the Sistine Chapel. Their deliberations and their voting, I should say, will be in the Sistine Chapel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned to me about they used to have the like thrones or chairs along the wall.
Oh, yeah. Years ago, when there was only 75 cardinals,
mm-hmm.
there was room for, they used to put up, they had each cardinal would have his own little throne. And
this is inside Sistine Chapel.
They build up the floor, wooden platform, put in these thrones, and all they would sit in these chairs. This is where they sat while they waited for their turn to put their ballot in the ballot container on the high altar. And this goes back to the election of the cardinal who became Pope Paul VI.
Mm-hmm.
His name came up on the ballot,
mm-hmm.
and when he heard his name read, it was on the ballot. He stood up. This is a story I heard. Stood up to make a declaration to the assembled cardinals, his peers. I don't want to be considered. I don't want my name on the ballot. And while he's standing there, but you have the picture in your mind, princes of the church, the picture in their Renaissance finery, images, at least picture images of restraint and dignity, senior churchmen, and while he's standing trying to make his case before the cardinals, the man sitting next to him, the cardinal next to the soon-to-be Paul VI, reaches up, grabs the sleeve, pulls it, and said to him, "Sit down, you're about to become the next pope." Now, somehow that guy knew the guy next
right.
to be pope.
Right.
So that was, I have a picture in my mind of the restrained dignity, some guy jerking someone's sleeve, telling him, "Sit down, you're next."
Now, how do they choose, how does the pope choose his name?
He chooses his name, and he tries to, my understanding now is that he looks at the history of the papacy, and the different names that were chosen, what particular name would fit him in terms of a leader. And Benedict, I know, chose the name Benedict, and he chose the name because he echoed Benedict XV, who was elected in the early part of the 20th century,
mm-hmm.
as a man who worked towards healing and bringing people together.
Mm.
Tried to bring healing right after the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
He was excluded from the peace process.
Really?
He wanted to be able to kind of be there and talk about peace, talk about healing, peace and
mm-hmm.
justice, and it didn't work. It didn't.
This is World War One.
World War One. So he chose the name Benedict as a person who's I won't say a pacifier, as much a person who brings wisdom, grace, and peace and understanding. His job is to do that.
Now, Pope Benedict, I guess, was his original job. I mean, he was almost like the enforcer of the church law. Is that correct?
He was doctrinal purity was his forte,
mm-hmm.
and he was the head of the department called the Congregation for the Defense of the Faith, CDF.
Mm-hmm.
Those who know their history know that that department changed its name. Originally, it was called the Inquisition.
So, I mean, how does he take the Inquisition and put it with Benedict the 15th, who was supposed to be the healer? I mean, I don't understand that.
I don't know, Michael. I have no idea. But that was the original intent, the Inquisition, defense of the faith.
Right.
Now. And he was in there and looking at doctrinal teaching and making sure it towed the line.
Right.
That was
okay.
His job. Maybe enforcer is a good term to describe
the enforcer.
Him. Absolutely, yes.
Well, you see, Frank Nitti was the enforcer for Al Capone.
Oh, yeah.
but realistically, he now resigns. And as you, that seems to be out of character for him. So the papers supposedly that he got were so disturbing to him, and then, now this is my own opinion,
mm-hmm.
that he felt the only way for things to change was for him to abruptly resign to put everybody off their game. And since he has now appointed 67 cardinals, he has more than enough to have someone appointed that might do this, might bring change.
Yes, I hear what you're saying.
Okay. Now, some people, I was talking to someone today, and they said, I don't know, it's going to be the same thing. That's why he had appointed those cardinals, because he wants to keep everything the same. Well, I guess, you know, you could say that, but would you want to be there to make sure things stayed the same if that was your real purpose? I think getting out is not wanting to keep things the same. I think resigning and making everybody do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do or be in a position that they wouldn't ordinarily be in is more effective. So, I mean, what's your opinion on that?
When I heard he was retiring, it was early in the morning, and NPR on the radio, and it said, Benedict 16th resigned. And I said, what is going on? I thought it was one of those little Garrison Keillor jokes.
Right.
Garrison Keillor can be very funny.
Right.
And I listened again, and then they repeated again a half hour later. I figured, my gosh, he did resign. And I'm thinking, why? Something's going on in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw his picture on television, and I saw a very old and
mm-hmm.
tired man
because
the camera's right in his face. I figured, it's too much.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, as I read articles in the paper that day.
He's 85?
85 now. How old is the president of General Electric? The CEO. How old is the CEO of General Motors?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want age, because age brings wisdom. We can gain all the knowledge we want. Unless we have wisdom to guide use of the knowledge,
right.
We can be dangerous.
Right.
So here we have maybe a man with age on him who has wisdom, but you want someone who can carry out responsibilities.
Yeah, well, because he's saying that, I mean, he's traveled to more countries than any other pope, and he says, yeah, I just can't get up in the morning to do this.
Which is understandable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he wisely, I'm thinking about it, he wisely, in full humility, you know, to give up his seat of authority, to willingly surrender it.
Right.
That's called humility right there, that someone else can fill that vacancy.
Mm-hmm.
And carry on the Petrine ministry. Yeah.
Okay, so that's one way to look at it, and I would be a good host if I didn't ask you that. I personally think that, yes, you know, you can look at every one of our presidents. Look at them in, well, those who had a second year, even a second term, even at the end of their first term. I mean, Barack Obama had black hair. He is now three quarters gray. I mean, what did he see that turned it? I mean, you hear about those stories. Oh, he got it. The person was so scared to death, their hair turned gray. I mean, give me a break. You know, so there's a lot of things that could have forced this, but, I mean, we were talking about the other day about the cost of putting up the nativity scene.
Oh, yeah. I caught this blurb, news blurb, that in St. Peter's Square, every Christmas, is a nativity scene erected with a Christmas tree. I've seen it on television. I've seen magazine pictures. It's very nice, very nice. It fits the season. And I found out, I listened to the news article, that the cost of putting up that scene was $750,000. $750,000. So I'm thinking, you know, I run a parish. It doesn't cost anything for us to put the nativity scene up in the church. Because it's storage.
Right.
Nothing new was bought. Maybe the straw is bought every year.
Expensive straw.
And run electricity for the lights.
Right.
Where is the money going? And I'm thinking, well, that's Italy. Somebody's palm is getting greased, so they got...
Yeah, I think. But this
they got a good job.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, it's we were talking about that it was... how many people work at the Vatican?
Yeah.
You mentioned something about someone they asked... Was John Paul they asked?
John the 23rd.
John the 23rd.
Was asked by some author or... I think it was an author or writer, and the interviewer said, you know, Holiness, how many people work in the Vatican? He said about half of them. Now, that's probably not a cheap shot. You know, you got a couple thousand employees around you to run the bureaucracy, to run the government, to run the place.
Because it is a country.
It is a country.
It is a country.
To pave your own roads. I mean, all those things have to take place. That perhaps some people just don't put...
Does the money come from then? Because it's its own country. So it has to have income. So it has to have revenues. Do they tax the people? Where do they get the money from?
Well, I can tell you, the best gasoline prices are in Vatican City.
Oh, really?
The best. It's practically nil in terms of Italian sales taxes.
Oh.
It's the best place to buy gas. Nobody can drive in there and get gas.
Right, right.
For their car. Well, they receive income from the receipts at the Vatican museums.
Mm-hmm.
They sell and they print and they sell their Vatican stamps, postage stamps.
I have a picture of. Is it. Who was in 69, 68, 67? That would have been Pope Paul? Oh, John, I can't
Paul
remember.
67? Paul the Sixth.
Paul the Sixth, okay. I have. My aunt sent me a silver dollar with his picture on it.
Oh,
I was in Vietnam. I still have it.
Yeah,
I take it out and clean it every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, you know, they sell things like that. But to pay $750,000 to have a nativity scene put out, you got to be making some big bucks somewhere.
That's a
sweetheart deal. I mean, come on. You got to be making some big bucks. So, I can just imagine Pope Benedict sitting down at his desk and saying, what is this? What is this? Can you give me some more information about where's the money going here? I mean, it's enough for anybody to get old. So I believe that a lot of this, he wants to change, and the only way he could do it was resign, to get everybody off guard. And he believes the people that he appointed, those 67, will appoint the right person to get it done. Now, I'm looking through rose-colored glasses, but I think, because why would you, I mean, this job, and it's a job like everything else, you don't resign from. It's only been two in the last, since the 1300s.
That's right.
Counting him. I mean, so, you mean nothing like this has occurred in the last 500 centuries? I don't believe that. So, we're looking at, I think, a a person that has very much interest in what's going on, but wasn't physically able to take care of it, to get it, to see it through.
Right.
And because we mentioned the other day, you mentioned to me about having this, instead of him walking, he has this cart or something that they pull.
Right, yeah, yeah. He's pushed, it's a motorized cart, he can stand there and hold on to the
mm-hmm.
railing or something.
Mm-hmm.
Either he's pushed into, or it's like a electric cart, he can travel the distance he needs to get
mm-hmm.
From the sacristy or the aisle of the basilica.
Right.
But you have to realize, from the door...
That's a long distance.
To the altar is over 500 feet. It's a tenth of a mile walk.
I need that myself.
He's winded going to Mass on Sunday morning. And so, if you're getting a certain age, and arthritis kicks in, the conditions, that can be quite a distance.
Right. Does he do Mass every Sunday?
Yeah, I know he does Mass probably every day.
Every day.
Whether he does it in his own chapel, or one of the chapels in his own...
Right, that's why I mean, you ask. Does he do it in St. Peter's?
When the situation calls for it, he would do Mass there.
Because, I mean, it must cost $750,000 to turn on the lights in St. Peter's.
I mean, look at this coming Easter. You get it on television.
Right.
Just to run that church right there. Just the lighting alone.
Of course.
To keep the place operating.
I mean, then you got to heat it. If it's well, it might still be cold over there then. Well, it's going to be March now, so it's early. So it could be cold. And, I mean, for that heat to go all the way up, what'd you say? How many stories is that?
Gosh. When you get to the top of the dome, it's about 300 feet.
Oh.
You're looking at a 30-story building.
Oh, my gracious. And just think, Michelangelo painted that, I mean, hanging upside down sometimes. I mean, yeah, it's amazing. But getting back to the conclave, right now, they're in the Sistine Chapel. Now, there's been so many things we've heard over the years, films about what's going on in the Sistine Chapel, Henry VIII, and all these other stuff. Now, what does the Sistine Chapel consist of?
The Sistine Chapel is just what it is. It's a chapel.
Mm-hmm. Huge.
Fairly good-sized place. It's as large as many parish churches in the city. That's a super churches, but it's a good sized church
mm-hmm.
by any measure. And it is really today mostly a place where the tourists go to enjoy the artwork of Michelangelo. That's what they go. It is truly, the walls and the ceiling are truly a work of art. And its primary purpose, I shouldn't say that, but its a red note purpose is for the election of the pontiff.
Okay, and they no longer had the chairs along the walls. Are they still there?
No. When tourists go, and I was in there a couple of times over the years to visit with tour groups, and there's no chairs on the walls, walls or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can walk in there, right. Enjoy the look of the artwork on the ceiling and the walls. Yes.
So they when they had this conclave, mm-hmm. this meeting. They're all at a huge table now, like the round table or the oblong table or something.
The oblong table, like you find at a conference.
Right, conference table.
And they seat the men, the people.
It's a big table for 115 people.
Oh yeah, a lot of tables for that.
Now they're saying now that the 80-year-old cardinals will not have a vote.
That I understand is correct. Yes,
okay.
When they reach 80, they're no longer cardinal electors.
Now. Is it Terzic from Africa? Is he 80? So where does he fall in this? I mean, Terzic, how can he even be considered?
Terzic is probably right at...
At the border?
Go at the border of the age, yeah. I don't know the exact age, but he's right at it, yeah.
And wouldn't it... Well, if Pope Benedict resigned, he's 85, and to me, that would also suggest that he didn't want another, he would not like another 80-year-old following him into this position. And that we need someone younger. And it seems like all the younger ones are over this side of the world.
Oh, yeah, they are, pretty much so.
I mean,
But as much as they were, as a matter of fact, I was reading something. There's something in this.
Yes.
In an article, it was what American Cardinals cancel conclave briefing amid concerns of leaks. I mean, they didn't tell the American Cardinals that. It says that as a result of conflicts appears to be micromanaging of the likely battle lines heading into the election, American German Cardinals have indicated they want a pope who will impose some order on the Vatican inner workings, while the Vatican-based Cardinals are defending their record and seeking to end the discussion. So it seems like that the American Cardinals are, you know, well, Americans being Americans, I guess, you know, they're walking around having interviews with the media from all over the world, and
right.
They say, no, this is all supposed to be secret. So no one told us it's supposed to be secret. Since when is it supposed to be secret? Well, the discussion about why should the discussion about how they go about choosing a cardinal be secret? I mean, I see no.
Is it
just like any other organization? They're having a conclave,
yeah.
And they're going to have a meeting. So now they probably won't have this meeting because the last one got there today, the last cardinal. They probably won't have it until Monday. So that means that they have all this other time for news leaks to get out. But they're going to elect a chairman of the conclave and a vice chairman and a secretary. And I don't need a treasurer, I guess, but hey, who knows. But they're going to elect these people in order, because you have to do it in some sort of order. Someone has to be in charge, right? And since Pope Benedict isn't in charge, how do they? They'd have to elect somebody to be in charge, wouldn't they?
I don't know now exactly who it would be, whether they choose someone among themselves or whether the dean of the College of Cardinals might be the person who would convene them.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay, know. Okay.
Right. Something along those lines.
But there'd have to be someone to take notes and.
Well, when you're in conclave, there's no notes taken.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is that right?
They're not in conclave now.
No, right, right.
So there's no secrecy involved. I mean, these are guys coming from their hotel room.
Not according to the Italian. God knows that they want everybody to shut up.
That's their mindset.
Oh, it was so funny.
They think like that over there.
Oh. He said the College of Cardinals was the college as a whole has decided to maintain a line of increasing degree of reserve. The debate played out as the Vatican awaited the arrival of the last voting age cardinal, Vietnamese Cardinal Jean-Baptiste Pham Minh Man, who was expected in Rome on Thursday. He did arrive today. As a spokesman for the U.S. Cardinals, Sister Mary Ann Walsh said Wednesday's briefing and all Cardinals' interviews were canceled after other Cardinals expressed concern about the content of articles in Italian daily La Stampa, which over the past several days reported details of comments individual Cardinals made in a closed-door meeting. So, and they're saying it's the Americans that are leaking it. So I guess we're not going to have an American pope.
I wouldn't place bets, but I don't think Americans are making the leaks.
Yeah. Well, I don't think so either.
No.
Here's the thing.
That's from the insiders.
Right.
And that's the biggest gossips in the world are the Cardinals.
It's like
they are.
Well, now you say there's no notes inside the conclave, right?
In the conclave, they come in.
When he started.
They pray.
Right.
They write the name on the ballot. They bring it forward, put it on the altar. Those in charge count them, lay out each of the ballots, see what names are recommended. They take a count, whose names are up there, how many votes per person.
Right.
If on the first ballot, if there's one name that has two-thirds plus one,
right.
He's elected pope.
Well, you see, now, does that have a discussion about, well, you know, this guy...
he can't play basketball, or this guy he doesn't like Italian food. I mean, they don't talk about them like we would debate whether this person should be the next vote.
Probably not along those lines.
Right.
They would do that when they're not voting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Sure. So they would have a discussion, well, just like our Senate does, before they vote. Is it verbal where they all get up and say, well, I'm for the Cardinal such and such from Venezuela because he has done this down there, he has brought more people to the church, he has gained more recognition for the people, he's converted more people. I mean, do they do something like that, or is that just done amongst themselves before they get in the conclave?
I've heard it put that the decisions are made over a cup of morning espresso. That's
morning espresso.
The power brokers will sit
right
over the morning coffee, uh-huh, and the little baguettes,
right,
the little,
right,
rolls.
Right.
And there's a small group discussions is where the names come up.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And they're bandied about the group for different people.
Right.
So
right.
Imagine small group discussion, talk to somebody else, pull someone's jacket and say, I'm talking about so-and-so, or kind of bring a name up. I imagine that seems to be more like how it's done. Now, it's possible maybe the doors are closed in the meeting room they're going
right
to use right now. They
right
may speak openly about the general ideas that has to be addressed.
Right, right.
And then probably, if a name isn't brought up there, it's probably unlikely, then they probably, a name would maybe be mentioned over the morning, evening coffee.
Mm-hmm. So this is more at an informal meeting than at a meeting, a formal meeting, that they will have these discussions about who's who. And, we don't want to know those Americans because they got big mouths. We don't want them. They think they know so much. Forget them. But, hey, when's the last time it was an Italian vote? In a long time.
That's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, and how did the Polish Pope get in there? No, I mean, how did he get in there? I mean,
yeah,
you know, I'm sure he wasn't on the mind of everybody there. Because it took how many votes did it take?
It took a few ballots.
It took a few ballots, right? I think it was four.
Something, yeah. I don't know the full count, but it was more than one. Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, how are they, they're all staying in Vatican City. Is they staying in one place?
There was a, I'm going to say it was a number of years back, they built a, like a motel or a small hotel within the precincts of Vatican City, enough to house as many men, which are cardinals. They needed a new place to stay. For over the years, over the centuries, they stayed wherever they had rooms for them. In the Apostolic Palace. And we say Apostolic Palace, doesn't mean luxury. And I've seen pictures of the years. The room was a plain room.
Mm-hmm.
It had a single bed,
right,
a nightstand,
mm-hmm,
and a place to hang your garments, a little dresser. And then there was a wash basin and a pitcher of water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this building was built and they didn't...
I'm sure that's
changed now. That's why they built I think it's...
The Hilton Inn?
Wouldn't have been bad. That's a concession to have.
Right.
What a franchise.
Oh,
I think it's called the St. Martha, after,
uh-huh,
of course, Martha and Mary.
Right.
Martha and Mary building. And each room has got in suite, a room with a private bath, so a little more privacy there.
Are there assistants or secretaries with them staying there, or they stay down the road at the Rock Slide Inn someplace?
If they're in conclave, they're going to be by themselves.
Okay.
Actually in the conclave by themselves.
Oh,
their
okay
assistants would be outside.
Oh, so even if they, when they, once they start the conclave, then they're almost like sequestered.
They
sequestered
really
again.
Sequestered. They are sequestered, and the only people with them are the workers.
Right.
The everyday people who maintain the facility.
The
cooks,
Right.
The butcher, the baker, the
candlestick. Right,
the
right,
people
right.
make the place run.
So when did they see this? The secretary, the assistant? I mean, of course, I'm sure they go, oh, man, you should have been there today. This is went ballistic. I mean, do you think that happens? Because the secretary is probably the only one that really knows them the best, I would assume. Right? Their assistant? Because they each want to have one secretary with them that travels with
they
them,
they can
right?
bring someone with them, yes,
right.
to do that. And once the conquest begins, their secretary is probably staying in some hotel in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some hotel place.
So then they don't even get a chance to see them once they're in sequestered.
No, they don't. Not until after the election takes place. After the white smoke.
Yes.
And the man appears in the new cloak appears in the balcony, then they break the seal of the conclave.
How long normally aren't they given a set amount of time? I thought they're given a set amount of time to start the conclave, right?
If it's the death of a pope, they have 15 days
okay.
to get to Rome and begin the conclave.
And begin the conclave? Or does that mean they have to be sitting down sequestered in the conclave? Or does that mean they have to set the date within 15 days?
I think it's around that time they can set the date after that. When they get
okay.
together, then they can set the date when they're going to do it.
So right now they haven't set the date yet, and I read the other day they
yeah.
want to be home by Palm Sunday.
I wish them luck. Now, there have been some conclaves. A week or two is not unusual. A week, or figure a week.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks. Some have gone up for 3 weeks.
Right.
You know, the back and forth of the palace. There was one conclave some years back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not talking a century or two ago, where it went out from 2 weeks, 3 weeks to a month or two. And, you know, the men that are working behind the scenes there in the conclave, the cooks, the stewards. These are married men. They got wives and kids.
Mm.
Now, a week or two, you can. What's a wife? You want to go back to your wife and kids? Well, they want to get home. So their task, they take it upon themselves. If something gets unofficial, they make life uncomfortable for their eminences. After the morning ballot, all the stewards and workers, they go to the rooms. They may take out the nightstand and put it up in the attic. The guy comes back to his room. The cardinal realizes, where's my nightstand?
Mm-hmm.
And they go to lunch. And the food isn't the same quality they had the previous week or two. So the quality of the food has been known to go down. Furniture
Burger
items,
King now.
Burger King. And then the items from the room disappear.
Mm.
And it's one conclave. The cardinals were reduced to sleeping on their blankets on the floor. The clothing.
Time to get out.
Yeah, get out. Make a decision. Either whether they, fish or cut bait.
Fish or cut bait.
Exactly.
Well, at this point, this is Thursday when we're recording this, and they have not set a date yet. But they were said they were waiting for the last car to arrive, and he did this morning.
Yes.
So we will leave this conversation here. And next week, we hope we have something to report on that they started the conclave. So this is Michael Lawson, along with Father Carl from Our Lady of Consolation, Charlotte, North Carolina, signing off for this week. Yes, we're back.
You know, I think this is going to be an extremely interesting conflict because this
yes,
is the first one. You know, when Pope John Paul II died, it was kind of understood. You know, it was let's continue his policy and his plan with his people. And though you made the point that this the current Pope, formerly Ratzinger, His Eminence Emeritus, has chosen a large number of the cardinals that are there for the meeting, I think this is going to be a very fascinating one because, A, we've never had, you know, a Pope resign, at least in modern history. And we've not experienced, I think, a confluence of events all at once right now. We've got modernity hitting the future. You know, we got, will we get finally a non-European Pope? Will we have a South American or an African? You know, will we finally have an American Pope? Woo, you know, there's a lot.
I don't think so.
Well, I think that you're probably right, and we're going to end up, unfortunately, back in
as we went into the sunset with a fistful of zines and fistful of dollars, there hasn't been an Italian Pope in a couple of centuries either.
Well, you know.
So the thing is that I believe, this is my opinion, that when he saw that first report, he said, "Holy Jack!"
Yeah.
What the heck is going on here? Where's this money going? And as the enforcer, well, the keeper of the faith,
yeah.
He says, no way, I'm going down with this. He said, hey, I got enough people on here that can take this apart.
Right.
And the only way to do it is me to catch him off guard, where they can't plan for anything, plan to hide stuff. I go, and they got to drop everything. They're not going to have a chance to play around. Let me do this, make up some, hide some stuff here, hide some stuff there. Nah, because once they're in this room, they ain't getting out.
Right.
They ain't getting out, and you can't send out messages by carrier pigeon.
Well,
because it would be the only way to get it out.
It's going to be interesting, though. It's a hard one to call. I mean, just cynicism alone says, you know, maybe an Italian Pope gets back in or something like that.
Well, you can't even say back in because there hasn't been one since,
well,
I don't know when.
No, but, I mean, like, look, with the last... With,
hey,
the
thing
is... With the last Pope, Pope John Paul II, we had a situation where that had even been predicted. You know, that famous book by, what's his name, West. Shoes of Fishermen. They made a movie and all that. But, you know, decades before, he had predicted that the next pope would arise out of the ruins of the, you know, Soviet Union, the post-World War II era, and that he would be a Polish guy, and he even named him Carol. I mean,
well,
it was pretty darn close. You know, but looking at World War II, this is the scenario.
After 500 centuries, he got it right?
Yeah.
I mean, no, everybody's correct twice a day.
Yeah. Hey, look, this is a harder call just because we've got a lot of things.
They did not expect when the Pope came out of Poland, they said, out of where?
Yeah.
Are you joking me? Who the heck is he?
And do you really think, I'll put you on the record, do you really think we're going to get real reform?
I think,
more of the same?
Well, I think we're going to get real reform for the simple reason that this is the utmost position that could have been taken by someone who didn't want reform. If they didn't want reform, you have enough people in place where you could have kept things the same.
Yeah, keep the status quo.
You could, and you don't leave. You don't leave if you want things to stay the same.
Right.
Hey.
Right.
You kidding me?
Well,
if that was the case, Cheney would still be vice president.
Hey, you're probably the folks could self-appoint themselves.
Hey, we got some stuff on here. How about this daggone Marlin, this 600-pound Marlin?
Oh, yeah.
The second
boat. This is a news item you found. It's got some amazing video to it that these people took.
I was sent that by
you. Got a sports fisherman out there doing marlin fishing, which, you know, these guys, these are large fish. We're not talking about, you know, just a little thing on a line here. But this guy, now they actually said in the article where I'm reading, which, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, right.
They were winning the battle. You know,
we were winning the battle, right. Yeah, right.
But,
it was like a joy.
They said they hooked a 600-pound fish, and it was yanking on the boat. And then the captain was turning the boat away to try to get some traction on this fish, and a wave rocked the boat, and his elbow hit reverse on the throttle. And when he reversed, he backed into the wave and went under. Sank the entire boat. He pulled it straight down. Now, from the pictures, it looks like the fish pulled that boat over.
I saw that. Last time I saw that was in 1974. Jaws. Well, how about this one?
Amazing.
How about this one?
What's this? Oh, well, now, see, you wouldn't have pulled this boat over.
No, I don't think so. He has the awful big marlin.
Pretty amazing. Now, there's a couple of things amazing about this. But anyway, any of you listeners in New York City, if you looked outside and saw a city passing by your window in the river,
yes,
that was actually a yacht. apparently, the world's largest yacht has decided to dock in New York City. And the interesting things about this is not only is it the world's largest yacht, it's almost 600 feet long.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking a massive boat. And this is so big, by the way, that he's got his own helipads on it, and that was a plural, by the way.
Helipads?
Yes. He's got a disco. He's got swimming pools, a home theater. You know, he's got the whole nine yards. He can live there for...
His own army?
Oh, he's got his own crew, 60 people. And it's completely armed and equipped. This is like James Bond. I mean, this is straight out.
Bullfinger.
Look, he's got...
Yeah, it's Thunderbolt, right.
He's got them here, bulletproof windows, mini submarine. So
this is definitely Thunderbolt now, right?
Right. So it's like a battleship, though. It's got intruder detection systems. It's got a missile defense system to take down anything in the air. Plus, it's got a laser that constantly sweeps the perimeter, and it fires beams and gawkers and photographers, so they can't even take pictures of it.
No. What is this man trying to hide?
Okay. So that gets to the other part of it. Who is this man?
Who is this man?
Well, it turns out that this is the toy boat for a Russian tycoon who happens to be one of the youngest billionaires in the world. Yeah. Named Roman Abramovich.
Polanski. Oh, no. Roman
Abramovich. Now, what a great name. You know, I guess Caesar was taken that week. But so Roman here has this home he just floats around the world in, and he's most known for being, I'm going to use their word here, it's a quaint little word, publicity shy.
Yeah, you think?
They say he's extremely reclusive and security conscious. That's another nice
thing. You think?
With a crew of 60 armed men and lasers on it, you know, but anyway.
And a missile defense system.
So the interesting thing here is he's come to America and docked his boat in New York City.
So nobody can see him. You're like, that's a hideaway.
Nobody sees him. He stayed on the boat. Nobody can see him at all. They can't take pictures of it because they got lasers that'll pull your camera and mess up your lens, right? So anyway, he's here. No one knows why. We won't tell anybody why. But the officials said that he might stay around in mid-April or so, but they can't talk about anything.
So, because he doesn't even know why.
What's going on here? You got this, you know, small town pulled up on the dock.
Oh,
hang out for a while.
Bloomberg and him are going to Burger King or something.
Maybe, actually. I got it. Maybe he's meeting that New York Cardinal to talk about the new position that might open up in Rome. Missing numbers.
Excuse me, oh boy.
Let's talk about your James Bond movies. Now, hey, we've been watching that 21 Days of Bond on G4.
Uh-huh.
I've been loving that. And last night was Thunderball, which...
Yes, it was.
What a coincidence. But I'm trying to look at this guy's yacht on the picture here, and I don't see the break away front section.
Oh, yeah?
You can jump.
No, because he goes in the submarine and gets away.
Yeah.
He goes under the boat.
Yeah. Now, what if the submarine, maybe the submarine is the disco portion. Maybe he can disco away.
Oh, right, right. Well,
I just got to ask you, though, Mike. You know, we do make an immense amount of profit off this radio session.
Oh, yes.
But how come we don't have a boat like that? I mean, I think we should do some neat broadcasting worldwide.
Well, I know my daughter Janine is a good artist. She could draw you one.
Awesome. Awesome.
You can have your own, as big as you want.
The grandbabies.
That's right. That's right. She'll draw this for you. I'll give it to her this week, and she'll see when she can have it done.
Well, if you can, try to get some, get his phone number, email, something. I'd love to talk to this room.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Play on his job. Well, you know, let's go take up. Maybe we could catch him, Marlon.
I need to play something for you. You got to hear this.
Now, what is this?
I mean, this, you talk about dumb, waste of money, going to school, haven't got the sense you were born with.
Are we moving from the dysfunction of Rome back to the dysfunction of our country?
Yes.
Ah.
Okay? All right. Let me play this for you.
I'm an OBGYN doctor. I've been an OBGYN doctor for a long time, since 1975. And I've delivered lots of babies, and I know about these things. It is true. We tell infertile couples all the time that are having trouble conceiving because of the woman not ovulating, just relax. Drink a glass of wine. And don't be so tense and uptight, because all that adrenaline can cause you not to ovulate. So he was partially right, wasn't he? But the fact that a woman may have already ovulated 12 hours before she is raped, you're not going to prevent a pregnancy there by a woman's body shutting everything down because the force has already left the barn, so to speak.
Oh, my word.
I mean,
now,
need I say anything more?
Well, do me one favor, because this is, by the way, ladies of the world, we thank you, we praise you. It is International Women's Day. But we wanted to highlight these regressive, I hate to use the word thinkers.
Thinkers!
Regressive fools that are still in Congress and or trying to get in Congress.
He's a senator.
This is frightful. This is amazing. Now, can you identify this man for us, by the way, for our
listeners? Phil Gingrey from Alabama, who is an OBGYN doctor since 1975. What woman in their right mind would go to this complete moron?
Because
you know, he was saying he was partially right.
Is he drunk?
Right. You know, he said, he was half right. He was talking about, you know who? Todd Akins.
Todd Akins.
All you have to do is relax and have a drink of wine.
To get some baby action.
That's all.
What's his further claim? If that doesn't work, here's a roofie, you know, we'll just knock you out and at the bar take a swing at you, you know?
I have no idea.
Didn't we see that movie at the bar on the pool table? What kind of troglodyte?
How can any... And not one woman would stand up and say, you moron, you?
Well, here's the thing. We've got a guy, and, you know, let's repeat that, a guy who is pronouncing on women's rights and conceptions. And not only is he, because let's remember the context, Todd Akin, got in trouble for saying that we shouldn't punish rape, that there's legitimate rape. And then there's, you know,
evil. Oh, yes.
Which I guess, you know, evil rape would be from, like, illegal immigrants or black people or something, but legitimate rape doesn't occur that way. So he was trying to invent legitimate rape somewhere, you know, whatever universe that's in. And so he was defending this, and he was trying to use his status as a doctor to say that, hey, all you women, if you're raped, all you had to do was not get pregnant.
Tense up.
You know, tense up. It's all right.
Don't have any wine, because you have wine, you're going to be tempted. You'll be loving it.
You won't get pregnant.
You'll be loving it.
And, you know, if you get pregnant, it's your fault. You know, probably because, here's the word, look up, it's probably your fault that, you know, things are moist in the world. But this guy, in contradiction to all medical science, while still proclaiming himself to be a doctor, was defending legitimate rape and then saying things like, hey, if you want to get pregnant, all you have to do is drink some wine. You know, if you don't want to get pregnant, all you have to do is tense up. And, you know, that's how biology works in their world. So the difference is these are sitting politicians who are making law as we speak, and they are controlling the purse strings.
What about the women, the female Republicans? How come none of them have stood up to this fool and said, you are a moron?
Well, I don't know of any female Republicans.
I saw that fool Marsha Blackburn. She was on the radio this morning. On the TV this morning.
Or, you know, Palin or any of these other talking.
I mean, I don't understand this.
Come out and just destroy these fools.
I mean, this man who is going to cause the Republicans, I shouldn't say Senator, he's a representative. I'm sorry, Senator. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you in there. But anyway, he is agreeing with this fool Aiken saying legitimate rape. And I know they try to get around that. Well, legitimate rape is when your daughter, who's 15, gets pregnant by her boyfriend and comes home and says, I was raped. That's not rape.
Right.
So that's what we're talking about. Well, yeah. Well, how often does that happen?
Well, again, I'm extremely disturbed that we have this medieval, you know, witch hunt mentality that let's blame women to begin with. You know, if they're raped, it's their fault. They brought it on. If they get pregnant, it's their fault because they wanted it or they drank wine. They didn't, you know, their body should have magically rejected. You remember that magic shield that one of them said back during the election?
Yeah.
That women have a magic shield. You know, God gives you a magic shield if you're raped.
Yeah, that's the guy that lost.
But these are people who are opposed to the Affordable Care Act and actively trying to destroy it, trying to defund it.
Yeah, they got this stupid group called the Susan B. Anthony group. And it's an anti-abortion group. But here's the thing. You're going to go back to what he said. Oh, drink a little wine. The first thing he'll say to you, you know what? You were drunk because you had a drink of wine and you were asking for it.
Yeah. Again, it says blame the victim and blame the woman. And then use the pseudo-scientific-esque talk as if it's legitimate in any way, as if somehow this is the way biology works. And it's insulting, it's degrading, and it's scary. You know, there's a million other things we can go into that they've talked about. You know, he did everything from reject all the stimulus spending to not voting for Obamacare to denouncing all minority outreach, for instance. I mean, this guy's got a real record. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
You got
absolutely.
20 pages.
The man is an utter, irresponsible, moronic, stupid. There aren't enough adjectives. That after we went through all this stuff with the Aikens and all these other morons, he still is coming out and saying, have a little wine. Relax, you're too tame.
Well, this is not only that, but he's coming out saying things that are outright lies about other people's laws. You know, not his own fantasy medicine.
But you know, I was looking this up. He went to Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he graduated last in his class.
Last. Probably because he says things like legitimate rape is a form of contraception.
But
pregnancies resulting from rape are gifts from God. And, you know, things like that.
I mean, why? I hope people who are seeing this man, women, who are seeing this man as their doctor say, hell no.
Mm-hmm.
This man should not. You're talking about closing abortion clinics. They need to close his office. They need to close it.
Yes.
This man's complete. He's practicing. He can't have a license.
Well, here's the thing. And this is part of that hypocrisy that really, really bothers me. The Republicans seem to be great about this. You know, we're going to get to this in a minute, but we've just spent a week with dramatic filibusters and everything else going on against Obama for having drones and whatnot, when there was dead silence against W, who started the drone strikes, and not to mention the two wars that they were drone striking in, and defeating people, and the domestic surveillance, and the they're coming for you mentality of the big government we fear so much. Now, all of that, Homeland Security, every bit of TSA, all of that, right? All of this was Bush. So, again, we got this guy who is standing up, decrying the evils of big government. He's called Obamacare, for instance, the worst decision in the history of the nation, worst decision the Supreme Court has ever come out with. He called the provision to provide long-term care for Americans Dracula, sucking them dry. Okay? He said this is the stake through the heart of America. Now, when he has been called on the carpet for making false claims about the Independent Payment Advisory Board that it creates to lower health care costs, right, that he said was going to destroy physician and patient privileges and rapport and secrecy and everything else. He says that now this is his corrections. This is his, oh, I'm sorry. This is his apologies. He came out and said things like, they're a secret cabal. They will accept unlimited donations for their services. They're going to get lobbyists in there, and they accept cash, meals, cars, vacations, and even homes, and that all the members of it don't have to have any medical knowledge, and they're none of them doctors, which is a flat lie, because they even point out here in these articles that you can go directly in the Affordable Care Act itself, and it has some provisions stated in there. You know, they have to be healthcare professionals.
Right.
They have to be certified doctors. There is no provision to buy them off with meals, cars, vacations, and homes, you know.
Because that's how they're bought off.
Yeah. But so this guy, you know, he's outright lying. He's saying these horrible things, you know, while he's pretending to be a doctor with his magical rape shields and drunken patients. And it's just really scary. You know, it's like the kind of guy that, you know, you hear about these news stories every once in a while where they find the guy with the video in his office, you know, who's got the secret camera.
Right. The doctor. Right.
You wonder about this guy when he's like saying, hey, all you need is a little wine, baby, you know.
Yeah, well, what is he giving his patients?
I know, it's just frightful. But, you know, this is the same guy, just to give you another peek into a hypocrite's mind. This guy adamantly opposed the stimulus package that President Obama passed. He adamantly opposed the entire Recovery and Reinvestment Act. He said it was the worst thing ever. We don't have to do it. It was a farce. It was a $1 trillion debt payment to Obama and his family, blah, 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 right? At the same time, back home in his districts, he's been going around boasting, running ads, and proclaiming victory that he brought home $625,000 in stimulus grants for Cedartown, Georgia's streetscape project. which he is probably the father of in his district. That's stimulus grant money that he voted against, that the Obama administration gave him anyway. But he goes around.
Listen to it.
Michael, we're bigger than U.S. Steel.
That's what he told everybody in his neighborhood.
Hey, you know, he's the hero back home because he's bringing home money that he's voting against and denouncing in Washington as criminal and crooked and evil. But he's running around going, look, I got the shovel-ready project right here. I'm the champion of my hometown. I mean, I don't like hypocrites. If you want to oppose something, fine. Be a man of principle. Oppose it. Turn down all the money. Stand in your broken-down shack and watch it burn to the ground and be proud of that. But don't sit there. Take the money. Go run around like you're the big hero and then go back and, like, spit on the people that give it to you. You know? Perhaps we should reference Mr. King in New York City.
Michael, and I said to myself, this is the business we've chosen.
But look.
Yeah. That's it. That's the business they've chosen.
Yeah.
They've chosen.
And I said to myself,
this is the business we have chosen. I mean, give me a break. Unbelievable. And let's see who we have on the telephone here.
Oh, we have a guest.
Yes, as soon as we can pull them up here. Yes?
Oh, it's our favorite doctor.
Yes?
Yeah.
It's that time again. It's that time again. Where were you when we needed you? When we were talking about that fool, Gingrich.
You told me to call him at 4:30, and it's 4:30
now.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Maybe we don't know that. But we've been, I don't know if you've heard any of it, but we've been lamb-blasting.
What? Who are the women in the Republican Party that let this moron, Phil Gingrich, say the things about women that all you have to do is have, relax, sit down and have a glass of wine, and you'll operate from here till the sun shines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, what are we talking about here?
Elma is it for one. Elma, whatever her name is, from the, who defeated Bob Etheridge, she's one. Virginia Fox is another. Michelle Bachmann. Do I need to say more? I mean, we've got these crazies.
How about Blackman?
Crazy.
Saw her on TV. Yeah, hey, Blackman.
They need to turn in their female gender club card. Seriously. I don't know what gender they belong to, but they're certainly not females. They must belong to some obscure in between male and female or a male wannabe club. I don't know. I mean, that's amazing to me.
I mean, it is just to have this moron say the things he does, and you know, he graduates last in his class and in the medical facility that he went to in Georgia. He should not, they talk about closing abortion clinics, they need to close his office. I mean, isn't there something where, is there an ethics committee for doctors that I guess be convicted for saying stupid things or being stupid if you're a doctor?
There should be a moron clause, at least.
Moron?
Yeah, there is, but, you know, it's state-by-state run. So if you red state where all the other doctors are also equally or more moronic, then you might sound like a genius to them when you make such statements. It's a state-by-state thing. So
excuse me, you're talking to people who sound make him sound like a genius? Holy hell!
Well, listen to this. Listen to this. You're talking about that. Or the state of Texas, and my husband, Joe Galloway, just told me this today. The state of Texas, a few years ago, voted to defund a women's health issues by, I think it was $74 million. So they cut $74 million out. Well, they found out this year that the result of them cutting out the $80 million, okay, I think it's for them to cut out the funding for $80 million of women's program has now resulted in 34,000 unwanted births, which has increased the expenditure, right, which has increased the expenditure of the state of Texas by $346 million. So they guess what they've done? They've put $100 million back into these women's programs that they cut funds from. So you see, this is what is going to happen. But the problem is that when they cut the funds for all their self-righteous, holier-than-thou reasons, they publicize that, but they don't publicize the consequences.
Right, absolutely. But they have consequences. Yep, they have consequences.
This is real time.
As a matter of fact, we have a muumuu in the state of North Carolina who's now the governor, and that we're quite familiar with here in Charlotte. We have a gentleman on the line right now who is a new senator, Democratic too, who is now up there. I hope he's not fighting with his hands tied behind his back. Senator Ford, are you with us?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Senator Joe Ford, I have on with you the chair of the Cabarrus County Democratic Party, Grace Lehm Galloway.
Hey, Joel, how are you? Keep up the keep up the good fight. You really have to keep up the good fight. And you know, if I may jump right into this with both feet first, Jerry Orr got his nose bent out of shape because what he did was he screwed up the bonding issue. He mixed taxable with non-taxable bonds, and that should never have happened. So the city of Mecklenburg, city of Charlotte, in their right, I mean, they were right in this. They you know, slapped him on the wrist and said, now, listen, you know, you did something wrong. Well, a real man would have just said, you're right, I did something wrong, and how can we fix it? But Jerry Orr is not a real man in my mind, because what happened to him was he got found in a mistake, which was quite an egregious mistake, mixing taxable and non-taxable bond money.
Oh.
And yeah, and what he should have done is just say, okay, I'm sorry, how can we fix this? But no, he goes whining now to the Republican Party, and he says that the city of Charlotte needs to give up their airport. Now, we know it's $800 million worth of bonds in the airport. $800 million worth of bonds, which was rightly sold and correctly managed in order to get the airport improved and, you know, all the improvements that are made to our Charlotte Douglas Airport. So the money was not mismanaged. It was well spent. It was well spent. And the city of Charlotte can prove that it was well spent. So he goes crying to the Republicans and to say, well, you know, what would be better is if Raleigh took over the Charlotte Douglas Airport. And he points out to them all the revenue that they could make, how much revenue the city of Charlotte is generating, which that's true. That's very true. It's very lucrative, which is why they want it. They want the money. But what they've forgotten is what are they going to do with an $800 million worth of bonds? Because you've got to pay that. You've got to pay that somehow. And the thing is that the city, you know, the city of Charlotte can impose taxes, but a regional authority by law cannot. So how the heck are they going to pay these bonds? They forgot that. They forgot that. The dumb fools forgot that. So now it's at a screeching halt when they pushed it through in 3 days. But dadgum, you know, What kind of idiots do we have in Raleigh that didn't check out the whole scenario before they rammed it through?
Oh, now Joe, you're up there, and you got to take care of this. You're up there by yourself. You got to take care of
this,
and you want it done next week.
Well, it is quite challenging, if you can imagine, with the volume of legislation that is coming out. If we're not passing legislation dealing with the possum drop, the latest piece of legislation that I saw.
That was absolutely important.
Exactly. The latest piece of legislation that I saw that was introduced is giving hunters the ability to put silencers on their rifles.
Oh, so
the deer can't hear them sneaking up on them, huh?
That is the type of legislation that is currently coming out of the North Carolina General Assembly. And while I have you here, and I appreciate you, Michael, giving me the opportunity, I'm not sure if any of you have heard this, but yesterday I filed a bill, Senate Bill 235, which is voter protection integrity, every vote counts.
You mean we don't have integrity? Are you kidding? You mean it's not? Oh, my gosh.
Very good.
Go ahead, Joe.
Go ahead and explain this bill, because this is absolutely important. This is vital.
What this does is it protects North Carolinians' unconditional right to vote. It also protects the integrity of those votes. Upon arriving at the polling place, voters would have the opportunity to either present identification or have their picture taken before casting in their ballot. This legislation ensures that those registered voters who do not have identification retain the ability to fulfill their constitutionally protected right to vote. The bill also represents a reasonable alternative to an extreme voter identification bill championed by Republicans, which, you know, the law which would unfairly have disenfranchised registered active voters who lack voter identification, including elderly people in rural areas and certain minority populations. Myself and Senator Ben Clark, who is out of Cumberland, Hope County, sponsored this legislation. Lastly on this issue, the Voter Protection and the Integrity Act is a cost-effective, common-sense solution to the voter ID debate. It ensures It ensures that every vote counts and protects the integrity of the voting process. This, Mr. Lawson, is a much cheaper alternative than the proposal that the Republicans offered. There is reliable, cost-effective technology available that the Board of Elections can purchase, and the state of North Carolina can make a one-time contribution for this technology and be done with this voter ID debate.
Mm-hmm. And will they be when this picture is taken? Is this something that the people are going to be given back to them, or is it going to be attached to to the book when they come back next time? Oh, yeah, this is you.
That's exactly right. It'll be a part of their voting identification process with the Board of Elections. Understand this. This is only for those who don't have it.
Right.
So, again, my goal is to make sure that every registered voter in the state of North Carolina votes and have – this is the other important thing – to have their vote count, because there's this whole provisional balloting thing, or you can come back to vote after we verified who you say you are. No, you show up to vote, you don't have ID, you're a registered voter. We eliminate the whole photo identification piece, and people are able to go about their way.
The next thing we'll be hearing is that the Republicans are saying that people are going up there in disguise.
You know what, Michael? They could say that, but let me say this to you and to the listeners. I wanted to make sure that, one, we were being proactive. Two, as a legislator who happens to be a Democrat, that I was providing solutions, because the strategy has been before is that we're going to wait until they pass something that is extreme and try to go through the courts.
Correct.
I'm trying to do something on the front end to ensure everybody's vote counts.
I think it's great.
It's proactive. It's fantastic.
I think that's – but, you know, you were talking about common sense.
Well,
you're talking about
and that's the other thing, Michael. I agree with you. But you know what, though? Let them argue against common sense, and this will be a clear example that if they don't support this type of legislation, that there are ulterior motives who are different.
Well, when you got a guy like Gingrich saying, oh, don't worry, women, you won't get pregnant, have a glass of wine. Relax. I mean, come on. They don't have any common sense, and they don't pretend to have common sense.
Well, yes, but Michael, what Joel said, it makes perfect sense. But absolutely. I agree with him. See, what they do is that they continue, if they persist and continue to argue against something that is so clearly logical, they're only shooting themselves in the foot. And 2014 is right around the corner. So in actuality, what I want them to do is I want them to argue. I want them to argue against the logic of Joel's proposed bill. I want them to continue to shoot themselves in the foot. Every time they turn around and they do something stupid like that, I cheer. Yes. Keep doing that, guys. Keep doing it. Because 2014 is right around the corner. I love this.
Yeah,
so,
well,
I applaud Joel. I mean, it sounds like a very sensible solution. It really sounds like, first of all, it's very cost-effective. And it makes a whole lot of sense because the little old lady who's 95 years old has always voted this one precinct, who has no ID because she hasn't driven in the last 25 years. You know, she and everybody at the polls knows her. Well, fine, they take a picture of her. Great.
Exactly.
That makes so much sense.
That is exactly correct, ma'am. That is the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what sort of reaction, Joel, have you gotten so far?
Well, I just filed it yesterday, and I had a meeting this afternoon with the senior Democrats in Charlotte, North Carolina. They were very, very appreciative and receptive of it. I will have to tell you this: this legislation has been brewing for a while, and there were quite a few people within our caucuses who were not happy about it because they didn't know how it was going to be perceived, or they didn't think that the Republican majority would accept it. And I have to I'll tell you like I told them: I wasn't sent to Raleigh to be a fighter. I was sent there to be a legislator. And so what I can do is to provide common sense legislation, and if people want to argue against common sense, then that is between them and the people that sent them there.
Yeah, right.
But as far as what I'm concerned and what my responsibilities are, I'm trying to fulfill those duties, and I would hope that all of my colleagues in the House and the Senate would rally around such a common sense piece of legislation. Let's get it passed. Let's move the voter ID issue off of the discussion table and put jobs back on the coffee table.
Yeah, and jobs for human beings, not possums, please.
let's hope, like that airport bill, that we can actually get some movement on this. I mean, they ran that thing for, what, 3 days or something? So maybe they'll actually take this up.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying, maybe they'll take up Mr. Ford's bill. I think it's absolutely vitally important. I think it's very proactive, and I hope it moves and they don't just try to squash it.
More people need to understand the what happened and how this airport bill came about and why it's being pushed through. It's being pushed through, number one, it came about because Jerry Orr got all twisted up and got his panties in a wad and, decided that he didn't like having his hands slapped. well, like I said, you know, you made a mistake, you know, you accept it, you bear the consequences. But what the Republican legislature saw was income. This is the party knowing how to add, okay, but not knowing how to subtract and divide. You know, they know how to add and multiply, maybe, but they know, but they don't know how to subtract and divide. They don't. They all they saw was money coming in. They didn't even see the bond issue. And then when the bond issue did come up a couple of days ago, they kind of like, oh, well, they poo-pooed it because they figured, well, we'll just raise taxes. Well, no, you can't raise taxes. You're a regional authority. You can't. You cannot. You know? And and this is what is embarrassing. This is what is embarrassing about our legislature up in Raleigh. They didn't know that.
Well, you have the person who was the mayor here since the dawn of time. How come he didn't tell him?
But I don't think McCrory knew either. I'm not sure that McCrory was aware of it. And what is the second most embarrassing, the second embarrassing point is, again, McCrory's Charlotte's ex-mayor. You would think that he would be pushing for, you know, for Charlotte's autonomy. Well, to all you Charlottians and all you Mecklenburg residents that turned around and voted for McCrory, thank you very much. You got what you wanted.
McCrory wants to jab us in the eye so bad because he thinks he should have been up there 8 years ago.
Listen, Max, I think you just get it all. There's nothing personal for him. He's just fulfilling his employment obligations to do
power. Right. Okay.
You know,
that's another story. But
that's true. When you get McCrory, you get Art Pope. So, you know, he is fulfilling, precisely. He's fulfilling his campaign promises to, not to us, but to his supporters, to the people who lined his pockets, who supported his campaign, who gave money. That's who he's, he is. And, and you know, while I don't like, and present company accepted, while I don't like politicians, so actually, you know, I'm not sure that Joel is a politician as much as he is a person of the people. Politicians, to me, are kind of sleazy. And I don't like politicians because they don't tell the truth. So that puts Joel in a different category because he tells the truth and he's speaking truth to power. But I don't, again, you know, that's my rationale. I don't like politicians because they don't tell the truth after a while. And as long as you tell the truth, I can't really put you in the politics category. But McCrory is the consummate politician.
Whatever you want to know, he'll tell you to you, so you believe it, so you trust him.
Mr. Ford, may I ask you a question about, you know, since we've been dealing with Machiavellian politics all day long, from the Vatican to Charlotte here, about the inner workings of our state Congress up there. You're there now. We've got a governor and a ascendant Republican Party in that seems to be rushing through a whole bunch of new bills and changes, and let's reorganize all the committees and everything else we can do. What are you seeing from the inside out about their new agenda that they seem so hot to unfold?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Go ahead. Say it again, Thomas.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was asking about the inner workings of Congress, since you're there now. What are you seeing with this unfolding agenda that the Republicans and our new governor seem to be very forcefully and very fast promoting all of the changes to, you know, committees, to laws across the board? I was wondering if you could give an inside look at that political game.
They make no mistake about their agenda. They're looking for a pro-growth state where businesses have the ability to have less regulation, less taxes, and the ability to allow the free markets to take place. I'm also seeing a systematic dismantle of the safety net that low to moderate income families have come to rely on. If you take a look at the UI bill, the unemployment insurance bill, where they reduced the maximum amount from 535 down to 350, they reduced the number of weeks from 26 down to 20. When the House and the Senate in North Carolina and the governor signs that we will not expand Medicaid nor enter into the exchange, what they said to low to moderate income families, or more importantly, what they said to the uninsured and underinsured, is that we will not accept the $15 billion from the federal government, and we will allow you to be on your own. And so what that means for us is that in here in Charlotte and Carolina's Medical Center, who is responsible for 80% of the indigent care, those of us who do have insurance, we will have to pay more. We will pay more for the services that we get for those of us who have insurance, and we will pay more for the premiums that we have, because someone has to pay for the indigent care in Mecklenburg County, and right now the insured are paying for the uninsured. The more disturbing thing is that when you look at the facts associated with not accepting the Medicaid insurance money from the federal government, and meanwhile, at the last count that I had as of last week, 8 Republican governors had accepted it, including Janet Brewer out of Arizona, Governor Christie out of New York, and the governor out of Florida. Three out of the 8 Republican governors that accepted the Medicaid expansion from the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. But what it says to me is that we have a leadership philosophy in the state of North Carolina that does not want to partner with the federal government and really wants to have a state that is pro-growth, pro-business, where individuals are having to rely on their own to be able to take care of themselves. And I'm okay with that. When I say I'm okay with it, meaning that if the, you know, as long as we have low unemployment, as long as there are jobs available, as long as the playing field is, we have equal access to opportunity and to the marketplace for people to be able to do just that. But as long as unemployment is at 9.4%, in Scotland County it's at 16.6%, we still have some challenges, and so therefore we still need to have some assistance.
Well,
also,
and as long as the uninsured, the number of uninsured keeps climbing, as long as, and again, remember, that when you have an unemployment rate that high, that means your indigent population also is that high, if not higher. It means that there are more and more uninsured people, and so who don't qualify, and even if they did qualify for Medicaid, now they can't get it. So where does that leave them? Again, it leaves them, like Joel said, to going to the emergency room for free, ultimately for them it's free, but if we pay for it, so they go to the emergency room, or they come to community-free clinics. Well, you know, unfortunately, there are not that many community-free clinics in the nation, number one. And number two, they also have to fulfill a certain criteria, you know, a certain income criteria before they can be seen at the community-free clinic. But our numbers at the free clinics have grown exponentially. They have grown, I mean, to the point where it's almost criminal. I don't understand why... I don't understand why you know these people up in Raleigh can't see that, or maybe they do and they don't care. It just boggles my mind that any living human being that claims to be a Christian can say to any other person in the whole wide world, "Go care for yourself. I don't care about you." Just basically what they're saying, and yet they'll beat themselves, pat themselves on the back, and tell everyone how Christ-like they are. Well, if they were indeed Christ-like, they would be caring for the poor, they'd be caring for kids, they would be looking after the very people who need looking after, not the rich.
Well, you know, it's absolutely correct what you're saying. I mean, he decreased from 535 down to the 335 or what it was, but he also gave his entire cabinet an 8% raise.
That's right.
I mean, what are we talking about here?
Which, again, that, like I said, 2014, guys. So all of you people out there that voted for McCrory and voted for these Republican legislators, 2014 is right around the corner. You can make it right.
It's called hypocrisy, and that's what it is. But you're absolutely correct. If the voters do not come out and vote in 14 to bring about some balance in the House and the Senate, you'll continue to get this kind of legislation.
Listen. I say it on my show, and I haven't said it yet today. It's the voters' fault. They did not come out. They thought when Barack Obama became president, there was going to be a chicken in every pot, and they would never have to do anything again. Well, this is not Disneyland. And they didn't come out and vote in 2010, and they got their butts kicked. And sometimes people don't act until their butts are dragging in the dirt. And that's what's going to happen.
Well, you also have that certain demographic of people that say, it doesn't make a difference whether I vote or not. I mean, they do that. I mean, there's a huge demographic that says that. It doesn't make a difference. You know, they're all the same. They're all crooks. They're all the same. Well, they're not all the same. They're not all the same. Every single social program that has been passed in the United States to help the poor, to help help people, has been passed by Democrats. Medicare,
right.
Medicaid, Social Security, you know, the Americans Against Disability Act, all those were passed by Democratic Congress. I mean, ADA was signed by George H.W. Bush, but it was the Democratic Congress that passed it through. So people have to understand that's not true. And then they buy into that whole Republican lie that Republicans actually are the ones that bring down the deficit. You know, they're the frugal ones, and Democrats are the big spenders. When in actuality, if you take a look at the charts, you will see that under every Democratic president, our deficit has dropped and our GDP has grown. Whereas under every Republican president, our deficit has increased and our GDP has dropped. But I don't know how it was that the Republicans managed to get this message across that we were the bad guys, that we spent money, and every time there's a problem in the country, it's because of us. It's not. You guys created it, and we got to fix it. We fix it, and then you come in and you spend it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So while it looks like under Republicans there was a big influx of money, there wasn't. What they did was they spent the savings that we, the Democrats, created. Like under Clinton is a perfect example. Clinton went out of office, and he left with a surplus. So what did W do? He spent it. So it's just like, wow, under a Republican president, look what happened, we got money.
And
he just spent what Clinton should have saved, dude.
You ask why he spent it? Because he could.
Mm-hmm.
Because he could. Well, we lost our senator, but so maybe he can call back. I don't know if he's called into a conference or something. But you're absolutely correct. And what really bothers me, which I wanted to get across to the senator before we lost him, is that I had a very, very, very bad episode of sciatica. It's been going on now 3 weeks, and thank the Lord, it's easing off where I'm able to start walking around. But I have more insurance than I could ever use. And I had to go. My doctor sent me to the emergency room at Ortho Carolina to get an MRI. I did not get that MRI for 10 days. And I called, and what is going on here? You know, suppose I would have had an appendicitis attack and you need this. The woman told me, but you didn't. Now, this is someone who has the insurance. What the hell are they doing to the poor people that go in there that don't have the insurance? They've never seen an MRI. Never. They're never going to see it.
They're just not going to get care.
No. I mean, so what are we doing here?
I mean, and where I'm concerned, because I don't believe in the least bit that North Carolina is going to go without this insurance. These morons who want to spend the money are going to look and see how much money they can get away with, and they're going to take it because the Jambrea took it, and that criminal down there who belongs in jail, Scott, took it. This guy, our governor, will eventually take it.
So well, there's another aspect also to this healthcare thing that we need to emphasize and make sure people understand, all right? I met several people that told me that their healthcare premiums have gone up since January the 1st, and it's all because of Obamacare. I don't know if you read in the paper about that one particular woman that met with Richard Hudson, and she said that she was retired and all of her insurance was paid for by her company, but up until January 1st when they stopped paying, and the company blamed it on Obamacare. No. It had nothing to do with Obamacare. This was a company that decided to do it so they could save the money, but now they could blame it on something else so they wouldn't look like the bad guys. And this woman, unfortunately, is dumb enough to believe it. And I hear this from so many other people. They said, my insurance club guy told me that my Medicare, you know, the excessive, the Medicare Advantage part has gone up by $200, and it's all because of Obamacare. No, it's going up because that insurance guy, and that insurance company that you got, whether it's United Health or Blue Cross Blue Shield, that Advantage program is taking advantage of the situation right now. Because listen to this, okay? According to law, insurance companies can only charge 3 times the maximum of their highest rate for a family. So if you're as a single person, if your rate is $400 a month, then if you get married, the maximum they can charge is $1,200 for your whole family. Well, guess what? They're rigging the game. So they're going to raise the benefits for an individual person. They're going to raise the premium, not the benefits, the premium from individual person from $400 to $600. So right away, you get married, they can charge up to $1,800 now instead of $12. It's the insurance company game that people are not aware of. But the insurance company turns around and blames it on Obamacare. You can't do that. Why? Look at the common sense of it. The common sense of it. Every single insurance company CEO is walking home with $1 billion of what? Bonuses. And they get bonuses. Yeah. Why? Because they're making money.
Because they're making money.
Yeah. Well, it's the same reason.
The logic is ridiculous.
Well, we were laughing earlier. They had a political cartoon on that said, you know, Obama has the highest stock market in all of history. And, Bush had the largest unemployment drop in, you know, history. So,
really?
But,
yes.
Yeah. But if you look at what the Republicans have done for years now, talk show hosts are great about this. They have been blaming, you know, they took to calling it for a while, trying to call it the Obama recession, you know, because during his presidency, there's been a recession. The same thing is going to occur here, I guarantee you, just like anything else, just like blaming costs or loss of benefits on Obamacare. These guys in office here, if someone complains, hey, my unemployment got cut in half, I don't get as much, the Republicans will say, well, it's because Obama's presidency.
Right.
Not that we just passed a law that ripped you off, but it's Obama.
Actually, that is true, because I had someone call me and ask me, listen, I got a letter, she said, I got a letter from my state legislator, and he said that my Social Security was going to be cut in half if Obama doesn't sign this particular paper by such and such. And I said, it has nothing to do with Obama. It's called a sequester. That's what it's called. It's called a sequester. It's nothing to do with Obama. Okay?
Right,
what they want him to do is to sign something where they can raid the lockbox of the Social Security. That's what they want to do.
Absolutely.
That's the whole reason that Social Security has ever, in its history, been at risk for insolvency in any way, is
never.
By the shenanigans of, well, the shenanigan of taking the money out and leaving an IOU.
Yeah, right.
Paying the IOU back. But it is paid for one-to-one for each person. I mean, there is no insolvency in Social Security ever. It's not possible.
If they pay back the IOUs that are in that lockbox, Social Security would never, ever, ever even be considered about losing money.
No, it's getting the money put in back anyway.
That's
there is no mystery money.
And it is just like the post office. I mean, what company has to fund their pension system 10 years in advance?
Yeah.
I mean, what?
Well, the whole thing, again, is just a rigged failure so that they can say, look at that dysfunction. Let's do away with it.
Right.
Well, yeah, and because they want to privatize it and keep their lobbyists and keep their donors happy. And again, one more thing, let's talk about the post office. It really is the most efficiently run. Next to the VA is very efficiently run, too. But the post office, look at it. UPS, United Parcel Service, and FedEx actually utilize the post office to deliver a vast majority of their parcels. You know, I'm sitting there going, blah, blah, blah. Really?
I mean, that is so incredible. People don't even realize that. The thing about what was the movie with Tom Hanks in it where he's working with FedEx, wasn't it?
Castaway.
It probably was a post office plane that he was in.
Well, again, it's the old thing of, you know, the Pony Express is working fantastic.
Yeah.
If you con somebody and go, hey, if you pay me $100 more, I'll get on that pony and ride it to the end, and then it's as if I'm this. You know, it's like you're just using
But the problem is,
ripping people off.
They're not going to ride the pony and deliver all the packages because if the pony has to go off on a dirt road, they ain't going that way. They ain't delivering it. It better be on a paved road. Because these people don't realize the people who live out in the hinterlands aren't going to get their mail every day.
Oh, no.
It's going to go to a post office box.
And like everything else in life, if you take away the purpose for something existing, which is to provide a certain service, and you just turn it into the purpose that it exists is profit, then it has no incentive ever to improve or even function correctly, which is exactly what we saw in the showers of Iraq. You know, wiring for the lights and stuff going through the water and electrifying people.
Yeah,
because they didn't care that the shower functioned correctly.
Right,
they needed was money up front. And then they just slopped it together in a wall and walked off. And that's why we ended up killing people.
Yeah. Listen, by the way, did you read Arianna Huffington's article yesterday about the Iraq War?
No.
You should go back and read it because she said, in that article, she said that the vast majority of the press actually went along with this drumbeat and marched to war, except for the Knight Ridder D.C. Bureau and four people who decided to tell the truth. And among the four people was my husband, Joe Galloway.
Mm. Oh, wow. Nice.
And that's true. Joe was one of four people that, as a columnist and as you know, a reporter, was consistently beating up the Bush administration and saying, "Look, you said," and really, it was not pretty. But Joe's a tough guy. He also speaks truth to power. But yeah, you should read that.
Well, he has to be a tough guy if he's married to you.
Well, you know, yeah. But anyway, so, you know, we've got to fix North Carolina. So all of you Eastern North Carolinians that came out and decided to vote for McCrory instead of Walter Dalton.
Yeah.
I'm not saying
that
Walter Dalton was that great of a candidate, but I tell you what, at least we would have known that Walter Dalton wouldn't have screwed us.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't screw the pooch like McCrory.
Absolutely correct. And what's going to happen? But you see, my whole thing is that these regressive party members, McCrory and the rest of them, know the jig is up. In 15 years, they couldn't get elected dog catcher because they're going to be in the minority.
Right, but you know, but the problem is how they, again, it's their messaging. They are sending out letters saying that all of this stuff is Obama's fault. They really are. I mean, they're managing. There are some of us that look at it and go, no, that's not true. But the majority of their constituents are not that bright. I'm sorry to say that, but they're not that bright. Especially, I mean, a perfect example is one lady who called me and said, well, you know, why is Obama cutting my Social Security? What are you talking about? I asked. Well, I got this letter from my state senator. Oh, okay.
What you need to make sure that these people coming to you know about Obama and his evil fascist communist regime is that they're cutting Social Security simply to make the people scared and weak enough and distracted enough that they can take their guns from them.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me. I totally forgot about that part. Yeah. Speaking of which, we were yesterday at a Heat Shoots a fundraiser for, it's called Real Thanks. It's over in Midland, Texas. It was a great fundraiser. They raised a whole bunch of money. What they do is that they bring in wounded warriors, and they bring in Iraq, Afghanistan veterans, and take them fishing for 3 or 4 days. And it's really the best time for them, just to show them that, you know, the country cares for them. Guess what? Mm-hmm. There was a great, 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 great event. And then what they did was they gave away 40 shotguns. Oh. I don't know if they're shotguns, but 40 guns. And I thought to myself, you giving away 40 guns? Oh, way to go. Let's give more guns to more people.
Well, of course. That's always the answer.
Holy cow.
If only we'd arm our teachers, we wouldn't have any more school shooting.
Oh, God, give me a break. Oh, anything. My kingdom for a gun. Oh,
guns. They gave away 40 guns. Oh,
unbelievable. Well, now, Midland, Texas, how's that little girl? Is she still, did she get married and have kids, the one that fell down the well?
Who?
You remember the little girl? Oh, come on. You're not going to forget that.
That fell down the well, baby Jessica.
Yes.
Baby Jessica. She did. She got married and fell down the well. And, you know, she was voted a person of the year 1 year. When she was a baby. Because she fell down the well. So she wasn't no daggum person of the year. She fell down the well. To me, a person of the year should be a hero.
I think it was an episode of Blassie.
Is she living in Midland?
It's like Honey Boo Boo becoming person of the year.
Does she still live in Midland, Texas?
She's still out here.
Redneck.
Most redneck and Republican town you'd ever want to come to.
Listen, if you can fall out of the well, it's got to be.
We're in Dallas now, which is a little bit better. It's a whole lot better.
Sell all my Cowboys for me.
I'll do that. I'll do that.
Yeah, you need to go to the stadium. Did you pass by the stadium and see the ninth wonder of the world? That's my stadium now. Hey, come on. But all right, I wanted to ask more questions of our senator, but I guess he got cut off. I don't know what happened to him. I hope they didn't lasso him and kill us and drag him into a room and try to waterboard him or something.
Yeah, he revealed the truth of the Voter Protection Integrity Act.
Right.
They took him away.
They took him away.
They wrestled him to the ground. I can see it now. They wrestled him to the ground. Yeah. You know, this is why I've had so many people ask me to run for public office, like, you know, some state senate or a state representative or even up for Congress. And I say, you guys crazy? I wouldn't last a day. I wouldn't last a day because I would just be speaking my mind so much that somebody would just take me out.
You took the words out of my mouth. What the heck is going on with our Democratic Party and certain names that shall be mentioned? Like you
You're talking about the 8th District, right? I know you are.
Yes.
Yeah, well, the 8th District, again, is upside down. And it's upside down and beside itself. We have 13 districts now, and I'm not quite sure that the three new districts that came in, I'm not quite sure that they realize that they've come into a whole entire cauldron of trouble. But we've got so many, you know, so many different counties that are just very upset with what is going on, with how June Mabry has really run things. And they've actually, you know, used what happened to me with June being behind the whole petition to remove. They've used that. They have looked at that and seen that as a perfect example of how she has overstepped and absolutely mismanaged her power. And this is what is the most scary thing, is that people think, that people know that she sees it's a position of power that she wants and utilizes it as. Instead of using the position as a position to bring together the different counties so that we can work together, she's actually used it as a dividing wedge. And, you know, the Black Leadership Caucus has put out a petition to censure her. As far as I know, I mean, there's thousands of signatures.
Well, yeah, and as a matter of fact, since I am now the new president of the Black Political Caucus in Mecklenburg County, and we're also going to be joining, we're going to be joining that letter. So what needs to be done is we need to speak to the chair of the party.
Right. That's true. That's very true.
That needs to be done because
he's coming Tuesday to Cabarrus County to speak at the senior Dems and the Democratic Party. So you're welcome to come, Michael. I mean, you know.
We'd love to be there.
Please do come because I think we can talk to Randy either before or after. And just, you know, let him see how disturbed we are by this whole thing.
Things need to change here. As a matter of fact, I think if we didn't have this debacle, Obama would have won this state also.
I agree. I agree. We had people the exit polls showed that people who would have ordinarily voted Democrat came on. They said, no, they voted a split ticket or they voted a Republican because they said, you guys are a mess.
Yeah. You have no idea what you're doing. Absolutely correct.
We have any idea what you're doing.
Well, I actually noticed that trend, Monica. We noticed it here over 10 years ago. Every time there's a major election going on, these Yahoo, fake Democratic, weird individuals and groups pop up.
Yeah.
So confusion.
Yep.
Remember?
So confusion.
It's almost too highly organized to dismiss as anything other than what it is.
But
at the very least, it's disruptive, and it does cost us elections.
It does, and another part of what happened with June Mabry is what she did was even more disturbing because she'd managed to convince a bunch of other neophytes. I'm talking about new county chairs. She managed to convince a bunch of neophytes that she had nothing to do with this petition to remove me, and B, that it was a perfectly acceptable thing to do. No, it wasn't. I mean, I had other county chairs who called me to reassure me that June Mabry didn't have anything to do with it. And I said, excuse me? Yes, she did, because I had people telling me she called me. She called, you know, I know the people she called.
Right.
They admitted it to me.
Right.
So how can you? No, they go, no, that's not true. I am telling you, trust me, they said. trust me, she's not behind this. And I go, okay,
sure.
You're a political neophyte. You ain't been in the game but a few months. I've been around for, you know, a few years. Okay, and I'm telling you, that's not, if you're dumb enough to believe her, then I don't know where your political future is.
Been around the block, running, walking.
And took a few stops in between, uh-huh.
Yeah, stops in between. Well,
that's
what
right.
else? Is what else now is the is coming up that we need to know about immediately?
Well, we've got election as far as district wide. You know, we've got precinct organizing is now. It started March 3rd. It runs to March 16th. So it's now.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get your precinct organized, the county chair can give you 30 more within this period between 3rd and the 16th. The county chair can say, actually, okay, you got 30 more days to, in which to organize your precinct. We'll recognize you as an organized precinct, but you've got to get it organized within 30 days. So the precinct, the county chair can actually name somebody to be the chair of a particular precinct. And it's just good for 30 days, okay? Now, then we have the county convention can either be April the 13th or April the 20th. Cabarrus County's convention is April the 13th. We're going to elect in a new board for that's what we do in all the counties. They elect in a new board in their county convention. The district convention is May the 18th, I believe, in which we're going to elect a new board of the 8th district. A new board of the 8th district.
And can you announce on the show here today that your name might be appearing somewhere in the district?
Yes, it very well might be. I'm being heavily solicited, yes. It very well might be. Mm-hmm. So look for my name somewhere on that ticket.
The major
force behind all of this is the people. And the people need to get organized, and they need to get active, and they need to start voting and paying attention.
That's right.
Because apathy is the killer we've talked about forever.
Right.
Well, then, I would tell everybody to listen up. Her name is going to be on the ticket somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I didn't decide to do this myself, but I was I've been heavily solicited by countless people, countless. It's not just one person saying you should do it. You know, my phone is ringing off the daggum hook. So,
it's important for everybody to organize their precincts everywhere.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that I'm seeing now, actually, I called you earlier today, and the reason why I called you was because precise that. And I'm going to give you a for instance. I am the precinct chair of my precinct.
Mm-hmm.
My precinct is a church, and we have never, since I've been living here since 93, have been allowed, never been allowed to have a precinct meeting there, only vote.
Oh, no, that's against the law. They have to allow you.
They're a closed precinct. So we can't, they allow us to vote there, but they don't allow us to have precinct meetings there. So,
well, that's against the law. That's a statute, and I'll send you that statute, and you can recite that statute to them. Yes, it is a law. They must let you meet there. They must.
No, they are as long as I've been here, there are certain precincts that certain voting places in certain precincts that you cannot meet. It's a closed precinct. We have about 30 or 40 of them here in
charge. But Michael, that's not in the statute. The statute doesn't say except for. The statute says that every voting site must allow you to meet there. That's not what's in the statute.
Are you sure? Because, hey,
positive.
I haven't met there.
Positive.
And here's what happened. So we've always met across the street at the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So when I because normally if you're going to meet, you have to do 3 days You can do it 3 days before. You can meet 3 days before and put the notice out. If you're going to meet someplace else, you got to give them 7 days notice. Well, we've right. always met there. That is our polling place. That's where we meet. So that was always been in the way we do things. So when I called today, they said, oh, no, you got to be at your precinct. I said, they won't allow us to meet there. It's a closed site. They said, well, let me call. So they called over there, and they told them, hell no, you can't meet here. I said, well, I told you they'd tell you that. So we're meeting at our normal place.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, oh, but you haven't given 7 days' notice because it's not actually your precinct. I said, if we've been meeting there for 8 years, that is our precinct.
That there is something that says that if you cannot meet at your polling place, that you can meet someplace else. And you're absolutely right that if this is where you always meet, that's where you always meet.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's why I had to explain to the gentleman. I said, hey, this is where we always meet. They wouldn't even go to the daggone church to meet.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, okay, well, we'll just do what you normally do then. I said, I was going to do that anyway.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is that people who have been involved, now what you're telling me now is that a closed site, that's not in the statute. Well, I just read it in the paperwork I got that certain, there's about 20 or 30, and they're all churches that do not allow you to meet at. So the thing is that those people have always met outside and not on the church property. So there are a lot of people who are confused about that, and I bring that back to the party and say, you know, why isn't this straightened out? Why are people still so confused about that?
Well, if that's actually the district chair's job. And of course, I received absolutely no precinct. I did not receive the first precinct information, not one page from my district chair. I had to go up to Raleigh to get it. I didn't get one sheet of paper from my district chair. Meanwhile, I had Janet Haywood, who is one of the people who signed this petition to remove, posting all over the place on Facebook. This, again, still, I won the case, okay? The Council of Review voted 9-3 in my favor. So get off it. Get over yourself already. No, she's still posting on Facebook about how I am so incompetent and there's nothing that's been posted and all of these precincts haven't received their information. You know what? It doesn't come from the county chair, dude. It comes from the district chair. That's where it comes from. The district chair got to get it to me first. And if she don't get it to me, I can't get it to anybody else. Well, she wasn't getting it to me, so I went and got it myself from Raleigh, and I sent it out. But, I mean, these people are crazy. This Janet Haywood girl is a nutcase, I swear.
Now, I didn't mean to bring that up about the district chair not giving you the correct information. Yes, I did. No, I did.
Never done it. She bypassed me almost a year ago. I stopped receiving information from her about a year ago. She was sending information instead to Janet Haywood, the secretary of my board.
If you're not on Facebook, you don't know what's going on. I'm sorry.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I thought my understanding was that it had to go to the district chair and the secretary.
Yeah, well, it comes to the chair and then the chair dispenses it. It absolutely. But no, she cut me out the loop, and she was sending it to everybody else except me. And I finally, as soon as I found out, I sent her an email and said, "Excuse me, how come I didn't get this?" Oh, well, your name got accidentally dropped off the loop, she said.
Ooh,
really? Really? So then I got about 3 emails after that, and then my name got dropped off again.
So you mean the chair of the party of the county's name just dropped off?
Just dropped off for some reason. Oh. And the secretary's name stayed on. Wow, it's an amazing thing.
it's like who's the governor of Texas? What's his name?
Rick Perry.
Yeah. Whoops. Yeah. He said, "Oops, I can't remember."
I can't remember the third thing. Right. Exactly.
I
mean, see, these are the sorts of things that maybe Randy Poland needs to know. That's been going on. The pettiness that's been going on. We need to know these things.
This is why the average voter doesn't vote.
Absolutely. So,
again, this dysfunction and this lack of communication and lack of, while all the dysfunction and miscommunication is going on, no voter is being educated as to how and why they should vote. So they don't. And this is the problem, exactly why we have Duke governor sitting up there.
Before the election, instead of going out and having meetings and, you know, encouraging county chairs to go out and say, this is why, I really had the bullet points as to why we need to vote Democratic. No, she was busy causing trouble.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Just busy causing trouble for her own personal agenda. And I wonder, I honest to God, just wonder, because she used to be a Republican operative. I'm wondering if she's still a Republican operative, because she surely single-handedly did enough damage to the Democratic Party.
Do you think there's actually an ulterior motive at work here? It's not just basic incompetence?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I seriously do.
Well, that might be quite a...
Let's see here. I think we need to get Arrow after this. Green Arrow needs to investigate this.
You know,
and why don't you investigate this, honey?
We just go ahead and pass that $10 an hour minimum wage.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. People care about voting if they have money to spend.
And you know, and you talk about sleeping with the enemy. Her husband's a Republican. So you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. She used to be. She, you know, before she became a quote Democrat unquote. Her job, she made a lot of money with this, was getting Republicans elected. And she used to say to me, the problem with Democrats is they don't follow the party line, whereas Republicans will all follow the party line. And, you know, and I said, oh, yeah, and run off the cliff like lemmings? She said, yes, still, yeah. So that's what she wanted to do to us. She wanted us to just do the Heil Hitler, you know, follow the party line thing blindly, and not have an independent thought. Well, no, you can't do that in the Democratic Party, because, you know, we're like herding cats. That's what makes us so great, you know?
We have
that freedom.
What?
We have that wonderful freedom of discussion and argument and you know, all that sort of thing. I mean, really.
You and your freedom.
Well, it just like this. Let me play this for you. Oh, listen to this.
And I will tell you, it's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
You need five.
Oh, five. Okay. So commerce, education, and
EPA?
EPA. There you go. No, okay.
Let's stop getting it.
Seriously? Is EPA the one you were talking about? Or?
No, sir. We were talking about the... agencies of government. EPA needs to be rebuilt.
But
there's
you
no doubt about
but
that.
But you can't name the third one?
The third agency of government.
Yes.
I would do away with the education, commerce. And let's see. I can't. The third one I can't. Sorry. Oops.
I don't know why he's not president.
Dina, you know, this is so amazing. It's so amazing. Well, Michael, I need to go. I need to run. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
I probably have to get out there and do a filibuster.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You never know.
Well,
I do appreciate greatly all of the wisdom and insight that you have shared with us today.
That's true. And I am going to be up there at that meeting.
Good. Very good. I will see you then, Michael.
Okay. And that
take
is
care.
Okay.
Oh, Bye. Bye-bye.
I'll talk to you next week.
She made you remember that all things are possible in America, especially in America where Obama is a king.
Yeah, hey, speaking about Obama being...
Speaking of a Randy moment.
Speaking about Randy Paul and Obama being the king. Speaking about that.
I'm against having a king. I think having a monarch is what we fought the American Revolution over. And someone who wants to bypass the Constitution, bypass Congress, that's someone who wants to act like a king or a monarch. I've been opposed to executive orders, even with Republican president, but one that wants to infringe on the Second Amendment, we will fight tooth and nail, and I promise you there'll be no rock left unturned as far as trying to stop him from usurping the Constitution.
I mean, we have Looney Tunes this week. We got him. We got him in spades. I'm going to play him for you.
Lock and load.
Here's the first one.
The very specific question we're asking is, does the president believe he has the authority to kill Americans who are not engaged in combat in America with targeted drone strikes? And I think the answer is no, but they haven't given us that answer.
They didn't give us the answer, but here's the rest.
Who are these terrorists that live among you? People who might be missing fingers on one hand, people who might have stains on their clothing, people who might have changed the color of their hair, people who like to pay in cash, people who own more than one gun, people who own weatherized ammunition, people who have 7 days of food in their house. I will speak until I can no longer speak. No, no, said the Queen. Everybody is Al-Qaeda. Hold your tongue, said the Queen, turning purple. If there's a gentleman or a woman with a grenade launcher attacking our buildings or our capital, we use lethal force. No, we won't drop bombs on restaurants. Your notification is the buzz of the propellers on the drone as it flies overhead in the seconds before you're killed. Is that what we really want from our government? Gobbledygook, the leap of logic is so fantastic as to boggle the mind. The drone strike program is sort of like a lawnmower. I don't intend to break the First Amendment, but I might. Who's going to decide when it's okay to have food in your house and when it's not? See, there are a lot of questions that aren't being asked. You believe in the Constitution so much, you might be a terrorist. I'm not talking about someone with a bazooka or a grenade launcher on their shoulder. I was at a Tea Party meeting and I was critical of the president. But I'm not a revolutionary. Please don't kill me. My throat's already dry and I just got started. I mean, and if you don't answer it, basically, by not answering it, you're saying yes. I would feel a little more comforted if it weren't an accusation by a politician that unleashes hellfire missiles. Democracies did bad things. I ask, do we know where all the students are? The answers that we've gotten are almost more disturbing than getting an answer, really, to tell you the truth. I don't think the president would purposely take innocent people and kill them. I really don't think he'd drop a hellfire missile on a cafe or a restaurant like I'm talking about. You might have a drone attack you in your bed tonight. If you're going to kill non-combatants, people eating dinner in America, there have to be some rules. Probably, inevitably, the milkman's got to go to the terrorist camp, too, or the doctor as well. It's hard to know what to believe.
Now, wait a minute. This man spoke for 13 hours.
All I got out of that was he attended a tea party
right.
Alice in Wonderland, and a giant rabbit with a rocket launcher came and killed the milkman or something. What the hell was that?
What are you saying?
And then you have people trying to defend this man for his 13 hours. Oh, it was the way things should be done. Bullshit!
Well,
I don't believe it.
This is
complete nonsense.
I will say this for Mr. Randy's defense.
He needs a defense, all right.
No, I will say this.
Because I went to the hellfire and misled him.
I did appreciate the fact that for his filibuster, he stood up and spoke. Now, what he said was Lunatic, random, crazy BS. Okay, you know, he's just sitting there reading out of Alice in Wonderland or whatever, passing the time. You know, give him a phone book. I guess that would have worked, too. But at least I give him tip of the hat for standing up and speaking, unlike all these losers who fly off to vacations in Hawaii or in California or, you know, the Bahamas to go, you know, maintain their peanut farm or something. I don't know what they do. But they put on magical filibusters that don't exist, and they block things. I don't like that at all. I think that's the dysfunction of government. So at least give the guy credit that he did stand up, even though he said loony.
And I said to myself, this is the business we've chosen.
The business we've chosen.
Now listen. He only did this because he's behind Rubio. It wasn't for the sacred house of the Senate. It wasn't for anything else but Ron Paul. So, you know, I cannot give a person who robs the liquor store and gives a child whose hat who blew off in the street because he ran past them, because he gave him the hat back in his hand, I can't give him credit for giving the kid back his hat. Forget it. He did this because he wants to run for president, and everybody thinks he's a moron. Better to keep your mouth shut so we don't prove you're a moron. Now this man belongs with the Looney Tunes. And as much as I am on McCain as a senile, old, bitter man, and that they're going to Graham, Lindsey Graham, who never picked up a gun in his life, and every time they see a war, they've never seen a war they never liked. They were absolutely, absolutely spot on when they said, what the hell are you talking about? Listen.
Result in being used against anybody in this room having a cup of coffee, to me, cheapens the debate and is something not worthy of
can I ask myself a question, especially on that subject? A lot of our friends, particularly Senator Paul and others, pride themselves on their strict adherence to the Constitution and the decisions of the United Supreme Court.
Right.
Isn't it true that as a result of an attack on Long Island during World War II, that American citizen, among others, was captured and hung on American soil, and the United States Supreme Court upheld that execution because that individual was an enemy combatant?
Is that
established without a doubt?
Well, there is.
The fact that these are enemy combatants, and no matter where they are subject to the form of justice as the terrorist in World War II was.
It's been a long-held concept in American jurisprudence that when an American citizen sides with the enemies of our nation, they can be held, captured, and treated as an enemy combatant. They have committed an act of war against our country, not a common crime. So in World War II, you had German saboteurs land in Long Island. They had been planning and training in Germany to blow up a lot of infrastructure, and some of it, I think, was in Chicago. So they had this fairly elaborate plan to attack us. They were they came out of a submarine. They landed in Long Island, and the plan was to have American citizens sympathetic to the Nazi cause
German origin, most of them, to meet them and provide them shelter and comfort. Well, the FBI back then broke that plot up, and they were arrested. The American citizens were tried by military commission, and they were found guilty, and a couple of them were executed.
Now, the thing is,
now we know why that yacht.
Now we know why that yacht there.
Pulled up in New York City.
That's
with a submarine on it.
Hey, you think? The thing is that this man, Ryan Paul, who has never picked up a gun in his life to shoot some little varmint, because I'm sure he doesn't go out duck hunting or bird hunting or elk hunting or any other kind of hunting. He's just got a loud mouth. This man never picked up a gun to defend his country whatsoever. And there is nothing wrong with that. If you listen to him, and I don't have the cut here, but Senator McCain practically calls him out on it. The thing is that Senator McCain said that, remember, he's the one who said he would not vote for, when the Senate voted 199-1 to have restrictions on Iran for advancing their nuclear weapons program, he voted against it. So he would have little nuclear weapons and little suitcases walking around this planet instead of trying to stop it before it got there. Now, the only reason why we got drones is because that these countries aren't turning over the terrorists to us. So in order to get Osama bin Laden, in order to get these other guys, well, Osama bin Laden, we went in there because we did not want to risk killing and blowing up the most wanted man on the planet and never been able to prove it. But with these other guys, we'll send the Hellfire missiles from the drones down to get them because it would cost 5,000, 25,000, 100,000 troops to get one man. It's not worth it. But here in this country, we're sending the daggone FBI to get you out of a daggone the corner liquor store or the corner deli if we have to. We don't have to send a drone missile in. So this whole thing was so stupid on the face of it, even, and all it did was scare people. That's all it does.
Well, there's also the I think you're most accurate on what you said, that the real purpose behind this is to get Rand Paul name recognition and fame.
Absolutely.
News, right? Because everybody showed him talking. Everybody talked about him talking. And that was their point.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, there's a substantial problem in America where we have anti-patriots infiltrating the government, and I don't mean terrorist cells from somewhere else, but you have a very weird trend in the neo-con Tea Party-ish people. And the first time I noticed it full scale was with Sarah Palin.
Uh-huh.
We have a lady who was, and her husband were secessionists. They wanted to take Alaska out of the United States and fight a war against America. And yet she became governor, jumped ship, and wanted to become vice president of the United States of America.
Right.
Okay. Now, we've got this guy who's, he and his father both believe full, just all out, that the only way to save America is to destroy America.
Absolutely.
Every time they open their mouth, you know, my first thing that I'll ever do is eliminate the government. I'll get rid of all the agencies that
run
government, all that stuff, because we don't need it. You know, they believe everybody on their own. They believe some weird Ayn Randian, you know, that's why his name is Rand, by the way.
Right.
That's not a random name.
No, it's not.
But they believe in this, totally this, you're on your own bootstrap approach. You know, you built the building, and if you don't like them, you blow the building up.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
And that's that whole mentality right there. They don't, if they don't like America anymore, they don't like their worldview being altered by demographics or change or whatever, they want to blow the entire building up.
Right.
They want to take America down. And that's why I don't understand. This is a guy who's
literally stated purpose is to eliminate government, to do away with it and devolve it back down into 50 random states all fighting each other in a confederacy or something.
Right.
With no federal power anywhere. And yet he says he wants to be the president of that. I mean, what does it...
Because that don't even make any sense.
Well, yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. You want to rule what you want to destroy. You know, you want... So it, the only way I can figure it out is a cult's personality. It's down to just power. It's all about me, 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 and me.
That's all it's about.
And they don't care even what they're, I guess, what they're even saying. Because if they really cared, they would certainly not be wanting to become.
Well, they don't know what they're saying.
No, but this is a guy who rails against federal power,
right.
Rails against government as the evil, and he is the government. He is sitting as a senator.
Getting paid by our tax money.
And telling us that the only solution is to do away with him.
Hey, by the way, when they put the sequester in and they stopped the, you know, the president had to pay for that dinner out of his own pocket, you know.
Right.
Because he's not allowed to draw a check.
Right.
So.
But they do.
But
they
why do they draw a check?
Because, you know, they write these laws.
Oh, so.
Always, you know, fire the poor people and pay the rich people. And that's the way their world works.
Well, now, I think we have, well, we've touched on a lot of stuff today.
Well, we've covered a lot of stuff. And as usual, we actually could go on for another. Oh, I don't know, 13 hours or something? Filibuster?
Yes,
but
as long as I didn't have to drink a little bit of water out of a tiny little bottle like that.
Hey, I'm still waiting to find this plum job where I get hundreds of thousands of dollars a year,
yes.
Lifetime benefits,
yes.
To me and my family,
yes.
And I get to just sit and read Alice in Wonderland. I mean, what job is that?
In case anybody wants to know, go rent the movie where Jimmy Stewart played Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. He did not read a book and talk about Alice in Wonderland. He talked about what he was there for,
yeah.
For 13 hours. So this was a bunch of garbage.
Yeah.
And then he says, oh, if I didn't have to go to the bathroom, yeah.
Well, here's the difference between conviction and reality. You know, someone who believes in what they're doing, someone who's trying to really do it, and someone who's just pretending for sure.
This is the show for this weekend, and we're going to be back. We're going to talk about the conclave, what's happening, because they're supposed to be meeting sometime. Well, they're already delayed. I don't think they're going to meet Palm Sunday. Well, we shall see, ladies and gentlemen. We shall see what happens here. But this is this is it for this weekend. And why don't you say hello, what is your name?
Blake.
What's your name?
Blake.
You got to say it louder.
Blake.
Blake what?
Blake Austin Moore.
And what are you doing here?
Just wanted to come.
I told you to come?
No.
Why? Why are you here?
Because I wanted to.
Because you wanted to?
Yes.
Why? You only come over here when it's time to eat. You seem to smell the food. You got a big nose? Like the wolf? You sure? You always smell food, though. No?
Yes, I smell food.
Oh, you do? Oh. Okay, say goodbye to everybody.
Bye.
All right.
That is it.
Well,
this is for the last word.
See.
And
don't forget, 21 days of bond.
Oh, yeah, 21 days of bond. 21 days of bond. On the G channel. G4.
Yeah,
okay.
About
good night. This is the last word. I'm like this. Life for this. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Then it fell apart. Fell apart. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Then it fell apart. It fell apart. Oh,
thing. I had to close down my mind. Too many things have caught me. Too much can make me blind. I've seen so much in so many places. So many heartaches, so many faces. So many dirty things.